frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
Hey, Doc, this is it.
Never mind that.
Why, that's me. Look at me. I'm an old man.
Hey, I'm Dr. Emmett Brown. I'm standing here on the parking lot.
Thank God, I still got my hair. And what on earth is this thing I'm wearing?
Wow, this is a radiation suit.
Radiation suit? Of course. Because of all the fallout from the atomic wars. This. It's truly amazing. A portable television studio. No wonder your president has to be an actor. He's got to look good on television.
Whoa, this is it. This is the part coming up, Doc.
No. This sucker's electrical. But I need a nuclear reaction to generate the 1.21 gigawatts of electricity.
What did I just say?
The flux capacitor storage. This sucker's electrical. But I need a nuclear reaction to generate the 1.21 gigawatts of electricity.
1.21 gigawatts! 1.21 gigawatts! Great Scott! What the hell is a gigawatt? How could I have been so careless? 1.21 gigawatts! Tom, how am I going to generate that kind of power? It can't be done, can it?
But all we need is a little plutonium.
Oh, I'm sure that in 1985, plutonium was available in every corner drugstore, but in 1955, it's a little hard to come by. Marty, I'm sorry, but I'm afraid you're stuck here.
Whoa, Doc, stuck here? I can't be stuck here. I got a wife in 1985. I got a girl.
Is she pretty?
Oh, she's beautiful. She's crazy about me. Look at this. Look what you wrote here, Doc. I mean, that says it all. Doc, my only hope.
Marty, I'm sorry, but the only power source capable of generating 1.21 gigawatts of electricity is a bolt of lightning.
What did you say?
A bolt of lightning. Unfortunately, you never know when or where it's ever going to strike.
We do now.
This is it. This is the answer. It says here that a bolt of lightning is going to strike the clock tower precisely 10:04 p.m. next Saturday night. If we could somehow harness this lightning, channel it into the flux capacitor, this might work. Next Saturday night, we're sending you back to the future.
It's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a going dry. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. back in the woods, you see. A woman and the kids and the dogs and me. I got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch catfish from dusk till dawn. Make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't do. We grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Cause when them old boys raise them shotguns, we say grace, we say ma'am. If you ain't into that, we don't give a damn. We came from the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. We can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. Grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a businessman. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway nights, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. North California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land. We can skin a buck and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
six, five, four, three, two, one, zero. Blast off!
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Shazizradio.com, and keep in mind this is only for Shazizradio.com. There's many other networks out there you can tune in on. Mad Science, if you're already listening, you already know that. So anyway, jump over there if you're having trouble with the Knights of the Round Table or the Super Chat HTML radio player. you open up the page www.shazizradio.com/radio.html, and there's a player on there all by itself there, so you'll be able to, you know, just hear it right out of the gate. So anyway, apologize for that doggone inconvenience there. It's duct tape and baling wire, man.
Duct tape and baling wire.
Yeah. Got my buddy Muddy on here. How you doing, Muddy?
Oh, doing all right. You know, it makes me think of Braille at the drive-through ATM.
Yeah.
We give an address to where you can listen to us. if you know what I mean.
Yeah. So anyway, today's subject, like to start off, you know, mad science always takes on a life of its own, so you never know where it's going to go. Hello, Jermaine. Jermaine just said hello in the chat room. Say hi, buddy.
Hey, Jermaine, pop in the show, brother.
So anyway, the subject I wanted to start off with today was about heating, and Buddy reminded me of the old light bulb thing. We'll get into that, too, if you remind me. Don't let me forget it.
All right.
I posted some links over there in the superchat.html, several different alternative heating ideas. There's the biggest part of everyone's electric bill out there, and heating cost, cooling cost. Basically, if you could conquer heating and cooling, you could conquer the alternative energy deal. And so with that said, I posted a video where a guy's shooting HHO inside of a catalytic converter. Now, for those of you out there ain't familiar with a catalytic converter, if you got an internal combustion engine on your car modern day, then you more than likely have a catalytic converter up underneath there. And essentially the only thing a catalytic converter is a reburner of waste fuel from the internal combustion engine. So essentially whatever fuel doesn't burn up in the combustion portion and gets expelled out the exhaust goes down and through a preheated via the exhaust catalytic converter. And there's some materials in there that maintain heat pretty good temperatures. I can't remember the exact temperature of a catalytic converter, but believe me, people, when I say 2 hours after you shut your car down, you don't want to touch that catalytic converter because it's still hot.
Don't park in tall, dead grass.
Yeah, don't park in tall, dead grass. You might start a fire. But either way, they're a pretty amazing piece of equipment right there on there. You know, even though I believe that if you adjusted the doggone fuel intake to begin with, you wouldn't have that issue. But that's for a whole different show. Anyway, so basically it has some material in there that when the exhaust goes through there, it gets really hot. Hold on, I gotta add Jermaine. Alright, let me see if I can do this. Tell Jermaine I'm adding to the call here.
Let me see if I can add him.
Alright, see if you can add him. Alright, so anyway, when the fuel goes out the exhaust, because if you can visualize inside the piston, it's happening so rapidly. The ignition of the fuel, the piston goes down, the piston starts to come back up, the compression forces the gas out the exhaust ports. And so, did you get him in there?
Looks like it.
And so that is how your engine gets rid of the exhaust gases. Well, then those exhaust gases make it down through the pipe, and they go through the catalytic converter, and the heat of that exhaust actually begins to heat up the catalytic converter, which in turn, after a while, will start to reburn. Add Justin in there too.
Gotcha.
All right, folks, let me finish talking and then call. Alright, so your exhaust is going down the pipe, and it heats up the material inside the catalytic converter, which in turn it now turns into a reburner of any waste fuel from that point on. And so that basically is supposed to get you a cleaner fuel emission. Well, the first video that I posted is a guy that is injecting HHO inside of a catalytic converter. Now, he doesn't even know exactly what is going on inside there, but he does know that it starts to bring the temperature of that catalytic converter up from the hydrogen and oxygen doing their thing chemically with the materials that's inside that catalytic converter. And so there's a potential of a alternative heating source using hydrogen technology. And there's another video link that I also posted in there. The guy's talking about the HCAT, which is the same technology, using a catalytic converter and hydrogen to produce heat. And I've been saying this for quite some time. If you built a wood burner using this concept, all you need is something inside there, some exhaust going through that to heat up that material inside there, and that material will hold heat for a long time like a thermos. So I was thinking more along the lines of a wood gasifier version of this, or a regular wood burning stove version of it. To where once you got this thing hot, even when your firewood went down, you'd still have heat to transfer out into the air there. So, anyway, all of these would have to be obviously tested, you know, because you don't want, like, let's say, worst case scenario, wood burner. You got this catalytic converter, and you made a stack of them, and you've got your exhaust from your wood stove going up inside. To the deal. Well, the catalytic converter, the way that it functions, should reburn any soot that goes through there. And so, in my mind, it would be perfectly safe. But let's say, worst case scenario, and you built up creosote inside there, which is the waste of the gas that, depending on whatever type of wood you burn. All wood burning will produce a little bit of creosote, but some woods like hedge or locust wood would actually burn, you know, create a little bit more because they have like oil in the wood. And so if that was to get really super hot, it could actually start a fire inside there as well, you know, chimney fire. You don't want that. You don't want a chimney fire. What happened there? Did I lose you guys or what?
Nope.
No, somebody just turned off their microphone. And so, anyway, I see that the wood burning one is one that I want to try to make. I want to try to build a wood burning stove using catalytic converters. Muddy, do you remember the two drum wood burners where they take two steel oil drums?
Yes, and they produced the wood gas, so you could burn the wood gas itself, which gives you another 3/4 worth of your heat.
Yeah.
You can burn it in your truck or whatever.
So yeah. What do you think about it basically using the same concept, but in this particular case using the catalytic converters to do that process? What do you think?
The catalytic converter, it's got catalysts that allow the chemical process to allow the extra gases to burn. And that's why they call it a catalytic converter. And it'll hold heat, and it's got a nice surface area. But me, I'd say that the catalytic converter, the honeycomb, which is squared instead of on a six-sided shape, the honeycomb in there is square, and they're very small, and they clog up very easy, so you got to be able to supply enough oxygen and get that just right to keep all of that burnt off of the ceramic that has palladium, platinum, gold, and many other semi and precious metals inside it that are the catalyst.
Yeah, see, that was my concern about the plugging issue.
The thing that they've usually done is the rocket stove mass heaters. They just run a long duct, and it grabs all of that, and it does have, you can add a secondary burn to it, but when you're going with a rocket stove, it's getting supplied enough oxygen where you don't need the catalytic converter. It burns all of it. You wind up with three-quarters extra already. And that mass that those pipes run through absorb all the heat. I'd go with that. I've been really thinking.
Well, hold on a second. The idea that you just talked about, it's going to have a clean exhaust, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so what if you combine that clean exhaust and then run that clean exhaust into the catalytic converter and only use the catalytic converter for heat storage?
You might have enough gases for that as well, but you'd have to add a spark plug that goes tick, 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 kind of like on your propane barbecue grill. You know, you've seen those are on the little rocket stoves that they got there, or rocket heaters that they use on construction sites that use either propane or kerosene.
Yeah.
But you'd have to do that, you know, and then be able to add just the right amount of oxygen to get their excess that's left out to burn. But from what I've seen on a rocket mass stove heater, wood burner has back, is you can put your hand at where all the waste goes out. You can put your hand inside that thing and not burn it, and it's pretty much nothing but vapors that come out. There's no smoke, just a little bit of vapor that disappears if you can see it at all.
Okay, before we get too far, because you're talking about different types of fuels there as well, there is a like a biofuel kind of little heater that I can't remember what the type of fuel he actually uses, but it produces no smell and a clean flame. There's different types of fuels out there, like alcohol burn pretty clean, right?
Yeah, I've used alcohol inside before, but I didn't burn it very much, and I made sure I was ventilated because I wasn't too sure. But I remember Thanksgiving on my way down to Texas from Virginia for my truck, which was had my trailer on it. We were close to about 19,400 pounds when I went over the scales. I'd gotten rid of 2,000 pounds so I could actually achieve 45 on the flat. Truck drivers were calling me the great jack and fly. I'd jack it up one side of the hill and fly down the other. But the police did not bother me. I guess they knew I was loaded. And somewhere right around Alabama, I wound up breaking down. It was my carburetor all messed up. It got down. Oh, it was down below 30 degrees. And I was stranded for the night. I went into the store and got me some alcohol, and I made me an alcohol burner. Kind of like the alcohol gasification cook stoves. And I had a leather jacket I threw over my legs, and I put that on the rubber floor, and I'd burn that for a bit, and it would heat up the front of the van. And of course, I captured a lot of the heat. I was real careful because I didn't want to catch fire myself or have a problem right there in the lot. But I'd say it saved my life. And the heat would run up to where I was actually breathing a little bit of warm air. And I'd nod off and it would go out. And I'd wake up cold and I'd refill it and do it again. So, yeah, alcohol can save your life.
On that subject, I also posted two videos in there about flower pot heaters where they use two flower pots and one of them uses one flower pot. One's hanging and the other one's not. But basically they use tea light candles, about four of them up underneath the flower pot in a metal pan. That heats the inside flower pot and causes convection, which circulates air, and you make a little room heater with these things.
Yeah, it uses the radiant heat, so you can feel it.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, the terracotta pots, they're pretty resistant to cracking and giving away on the heat.
I'm always really cautious around open flame heating systems, but in a pinch, this looks like something that you could actually do for like a survival kind of thing if you had a couple of flower pots and heck, you can make your own candles if you have to. But I don't really like open flame heating deals unless you're going to put like I got a wood burner at my house, but it's outside. You know, it's outside the building, and the only thing that comes inside is the warm air from that deal. It's vented that way. Really paranoid when it comes to fire. You know, so I don't.
You can't paint a car with a wood stove. You can't paint a car in a booth with a wood stove for heat. I have, and I've seen the little fingers creeping through the air as it got to the right mixture, and then the stove would draft more because it had more heat, and it would throw it and suck it all back. But I know one person did some of a similar experiment. He was making some kind of alcohol fuel, and he wound up losing his house, so that didn't work out too good.
Yeah, we don't want nobody to lose their house. That's a terrible thing. Now, see, Justin was doing some... is Justin still in here? Yeah,
no? Looks like you.
Yeah, I'm here. I was muted. Oh, sorry.
I was going to ask you a while back how you were talking about the heating system that you were using in your building over there where... Essentially, you got magnets going across the plate of copper.
Correct.
Is that still working?
Yes.
So, you want to tell everybody how that actually functions so I don't get it wrong?
Sure. It's just using magnets and copper, you're making full core currents, right? You're basically like taking an elastic and you stretch it out and then you let go of it, it slaps back. Every time a magnet goes across the copper coil, that's what it's doing. It's pushing and it's letting go. It's slapping.
So, for the average Joe out there that don't know high tech, can you like make it like a simple magnet spinning across the copper kind of thing?
Right. That's all you're doing is you're spinning some magnets across a copper plate or even an aluminum plate. Anything that will be deflective, right?
Meanwhile, you're circulating water through it, right?
Anything that's conducting electricity. You're running the electricity back and forth in circles as the magnet passes. As the magnet's approaching, it spins one way, and as the magnet's leaving, it spins the other way. So it's kind of like pretty much what the microwave does. It runs the electricity back and forth in circles through there, winds up with that much electricity flowing through anything, it starts grabbing heat. Start showing it off in the radiant heat.
The magnets don't need to be alternating. They can all be the same way. It's the spacing between the magnets. I did a full test on it. They both reach the same temperature in a minute.
What kind of temperatures are you getting out of that thing?
No, I replaced a 650,000 BTU gas boiler system.
Well, that's pretty impressive. Well, see, a lot of the electric heaters that we work, that we use these days, are pretty doggone inefficient. Now, keep in mind, they do have some out there that are pretty well engineered that, you know, basically use the heating to heat up ceramic and stuff like that. You know, and then that ceramic kind of supplements how much electricity it normally uses. You guys remember them old-style electric heaters that was nothing more than a couple coils going across there and they get red hot and they were dangerous as all get out?
Yeah, you talk about the ones without the fan, they were just radiant heat
only. Yeah. Man, those things right there are probably the most inefficient heating systems out there. And so I'm thinking if you could take a lot of these different concepts, including the catalytic converter, because the catalytic converter, because of the materials inside there, I'm thinking more along the lines of the heat retention, you know, like the ceramic ones that they use nowadays. The ceramic helps to hold heat, and so you don't need as much on that wire to maintain it. You see what I mean? You're not just relying on resistance of that wire to get your heat.
Well, they run the fan across them. Those are a lot more efficient because it keeps the coils much cooler.
Yeah.
And it's actually heating air to cool it. And that's what I got going in here right now. And that did a real nice job on low last night, even though it got down to about 40-something degrees. That did me well. I got it running on 750 watts. I got a question for Justin. You replaced how many BTUs?
650,000.
650,000. And what are you using to spin the rotor?
30 horse.
30 horse?
Three phase.
Three phase.
Yeah, with a single phase, per day it costs for that gas heater $20 a day to heat that church. With a single phase motor, it's gonna cost you $20.
But with the three phase, it cost you.
With the three phase, it costs about $7 and $8.
Sweet.
It's not free energy. I'm just reducing the cost.
Yeah,
oh, that's the key.
So you're taking it down to about a third of what it used to cost to heat that whole church.
Right.
That's awesome right there.
And the whole point of replacing, it didn't need to replace the gas boiler system, but because of what we're doing in the church, we've eliminated the gas lines, we've drilled our own well, we've eliminated our own hydro lines, we have our own hydro. We're self-sufficient, and we're doing it as a church. So that we can show the community, hey, look at this big place. Look what we're doing with it. You can do it too in your little home.
And any time that either one of the system fails, you still have the original as a backup, correct?
Yes, actually we're in the process of building another heater. So we can have two heaters running side by side. So it doesn't take the system long at all to heat up. And not only that, like you're saying, if one needs to go under maintenance and stuff like that, because there's a lot of effects that go on with these magnets. I would rather not talk about it on the air about it, though.
Well, a lot of the different technologies available out there, there's water cavitation. By spinning water really fast, you can actually get it to heat up. And by creating a water hammer effect, you can also get water to heat up. And so there's a lot of different technologies available out there, but I want to put on the table everything that we know about heating, you know, because like I said, if you could actually get your heating costs down, like Justin said, it's not free energy, but what he is doing is supplementing his energy bill to where, you know, if the average Joe could at the very least be able to supplement their energy bill and still stay comfortably warm, then, you know, that's the key. You know, this whole deal right here, if, like in my circumstance, you know, during the wintertime, I could get anywhere from a $300 to a $600 a month light bill. You know, that's $300 or $600 that I could put towards alternative energy research and such, and, you know, basically supplement my electric bill. You know, everything I got around here is electric. So I don't use any gas except for the wood stove that I've got outside. That's all I got, you know, is electric. And these big old industrial strength heaters that I got out there, when you turn those things on, if it gets down below zero and that second element kicks in, that doggone meter out there on the pole takes off like a helicopter, man.
Why don't you take two electric heaters and put one on L1 and the other one on L2? That'll cut your cost in half because your meter only sees one phase. That's why Justin's able to save two-thirds with a three phase.
Right.
You need to draw me up a map of that because I'm hearing what you're saying and I understand how the concept works, but these meters is what I don't get.
Yeah, you put them both on. You put one on L1, the other meter on L2. Just find out which plug's in your house, which you can figure out with a voltmeter and an extra long piece of wire. You stick one on the hot leg in the plug, and you stick the other one in the hot leg on the other plug. And if you see 240 instead of 110, then you know you're dealing with a different phase. Plug the other heater into the other one.
Huh.
You just go ahead and max them out when it gets hot. That way you're, even though it just got colder, you need two heaters instead of one. You're actually, they're coming on at the same time and your meter's only seeing the fact that you're using one. Because it only measured from one leg.
Well, I've been having this deal with my power company all the time. It's always sending me this notice. Oh, you're using 70% more electricity than your neighbors. And I'm like, you know, either they got a bum meter out here or I got something bleeding off into the ground or something, because if I'm spending 70% more than my neighbors and my neighbors are pretty much using the same thing that I'm using, something ain't right.
Well, you got a heck of a lot of space there with a lab and a house and all that stuff. I imagine you'd be using more.
Yeah.
70% more?
Yeah.
Well, that means if you were using 100% more, then you're using more per facility. So I'd say you're using less than they are per building.
Yeah.
So, problem.
So that could be
50%. So you use 50% more?
Yeah. Either way, if I could get control of the heating and the cooling portion for the buildings that I use, then I would be fine. You know, and that's why I was saying some of these different technologies out there, like the one I'm interested in at the moment is the catalytic converter using the hydrogen technology. Because if that's not putting off any poison off gas or anything like that, you know, I haven't looked into it enough to find out, you know, what all chemistry's going on inside there. That's why I wish Thomas was around right now, because he'd probably know what I'm talking about. But if that's only producing steam out the other end, you know, water, that's brilliant. And if you go to talk about wattage-wise, you said earlier you used using, what, a 700 or 750-watt heater?
Yeah, 750-watt electric heater.
So, how many watts do you think it would take to run a small hydrogen cell that would do the same job for less money?
Well, 746 watts equals 1 horsepower, so I'm using 1 horsepower when the meter is on.
So
is that it? Did I hear the question correct?
Run that by me again.
All right, one horsepower is equal to 746 watts. If I'm using 750 watts because I'm using my heater on low, then I'm using 1 horsepower. And when you hook your other one in there, basically as far as the meter goes, you're using the same.
Well, I guess what I was asking was, if you built a hydrogen cell using that, what they call it, HCAT, where the hydrogen and the catalytic converter, you're sending the hydrogen and oxygen inside the catalytic converter, which causes a reaction, which then in turn creates the heat. So, I don't know what the most efficient hydrogen cell out there is. Do you?
Sorry, I had to quiet the canine there. Do I know what now?
The most efficient hydrogen cell that they've got out there as far as wattage-wise. Because if you could get, like, let's say a 40-watt hydrogen cell to put hydrogen in there and produce enough heat, then that sure would beat the whole 700-watt heater that you had to use.
It wouldn't work at night, but I'd put the solar panel directly to your stainless steel plates. What I'm thinking about is, what I've noticed from Stanley Myers was I've seen a bigger system than what Stanley Myers was using, and this guy was using stainless steel funnels. And what that does, and same thing that Stanley Myers did, he had them tubes that are all around each other, and what that did was create convection. He didn't have them all the way to the bottom so they can draw the water up through it while it was bubbling. The bubbles would draw the water up, and it had to be over the top of the plates. When the water wasn't over the top of the plates, that current stopped. So the main deal is to use the bubbles that are coming up of hydrogen and oxygen to make the water flow past the plates, and that became very efficient. So my idea and what I've been looking at is down there at, not Family Dollar, but Dollar Tree, where everything's a dollar, they got some stainless steel bowls. And if you glue some vision string or some weed eater string, something about the 1.0 string on the outside of the bowls. You can just keep setting them on top of each other and drill the bottom out. And I'm thinking that would draw a lot of water through there, and they'd be very close, and you'd wind up getting the current and the HHO going through them. And I just hook them right straight to a solar panel. That's definitely free energy. And you wouldn't, you really wouldn't need to be hooked up to your 110 or your 220 or whatever. I'd call that pretty efficient. As long as the water can flow between the plates, even if you spaced them apart just a little bit and stacked them, you'd have one heck of a, not a convection, but a bubble drawn current. I'd go with that. And stainless steel is what you need, or your water gets kind of rusty and you have to clean your plates daily and stuff like that. I'd rather have a system I don't have to take apart.
Well, I've been thinking about this whole process for a long time. Water is a powerful fuel, you know, whether you're burning it or you heat it up and you use it to transfer heat to something else. So, have you actually taken a look at your internal combustion engine and how your heater in your car works, where it's circulating the water from the heat off the engine, you know, down into a radiator system and then blowing a fan across there? If you could build a hydrogen ran motor, even if that motor wasn't efficient as to the point where it had a lot of horsepower, but it did generate the heat from that, and you had a water jacket on this engine that would transfer that water, you know, heat that water up to 160 to 200 degrees or something like that, then you could actually use that technology just for heating purposes. You see what I'm trying to say here?
Yep, and that brings two things to mind. It doesn't matter if that motor is efficient, because usually the loss in efficiency shows up as heat.
Yeah.
And if you're just trying, and you got your fan blade on your motor, and maybe on your water circulating system, it's going to give off heat. And say the fan's going to pull it off that first motor, and your little pump, I imagine that's going to be taken care of with the HHO kicking off. And you can burn that off as well. So, I mean, I wouldn't say that. Now, here's another thing. According to the volume of water, one thing from Stanley Myers was it changed the frequency. And I think one of the most efficient frequencies of pulse DC that you'd run through is right in the CB range, around 27 megahertz.
Yeah.
So that helped kick the HHO off very well. So if you could just find out how much water with your 27 megahertz, get your CV and throw your linear on there, and I'd work with that. That might, you know, you might even generate enough electricity to run that water.
Well, it's amazing that you said that, because
you need excess. You don't need excess. All you need is enough to run it.
There's a video out there on YouTube where a guy is using radio waves to not only heat water, but ignite it on demand. So essentially, he's burning water. All right, but he's using radio frequencies to do it. Now,
right, I'd do that. Basically, you could switch channels to find out where you're getting your most efficiency, and I would put a Faraday cage around the whole thing, because anywhere close to 30 megahertz, you have a danger of getting radiated with too much RF radiation. So I definitely put a Faraday cage around the whole thing, which still allows the air to flow through.
there's a lot of generators out there that have water jackets already on them, that have basically built-in radiator, like some of the diesel generators. And I've been talking to my friend who basically, he's completely off the grid. He runs generators. He runs diesel or gas, depending on price or whatever, and he actually has some propane generators, the old Generac ones, that they have their own radiator, their own cooling system. And I asked him, you know, why don't you take and build you a heating system for your, at least your shop with that? You know, if you're going to be running it anyway, you might as well transfer that heat into your shop.
Two things I'd have to interject on this as well. Number one, Jeremiah Fishwick, who is our guest here as well. He gets into them more, him and his father, they get into these Lister engines, these old-timey Lister engines, and rebuild them. Matter of fact, Jeremiah is a fabricator as well, and he plays with copper and other metals and such, and he made a jacket for the piston, all by handwork. Now, that's something else.
That's cool. Jermaine's got some really good...
He's got some skills, Bubba, and he knows about these. But the second thing I'd have to interject here is one time when we didn't have our water, we had one of the kerosene kerosene from the oil company, and they wanted $750 because the people that lived in the house before us had a $750 deal, and they said that was what their deposit was going to be. And I said, oh, heck no. So before I wound up taking the that wavy piece of metal out of the center and sticking a hairdryer down there, which heated it up in 15 minutes with no problem on low power on that hairdryer, I was outside flushing a radiator, and I just had the car idle. I was flushing that radiator, and all I did was take the top tube off because I couldn't get to the bottom when it was hard to do. So I stuck the water hose in and then put the... And I figured the water was flowing a little faster than what the water hose could put in, so I pulled that top hose back over into the radiator, let it flush twice or whatever. I tell you what, even though I was putting new water in as fast as the hose could put it in there, I could barely hang on to that top hose because that water was so hot and I was spilling it out just as fast. So, in other words, with just a regular engine idling to cool the engine, I was making more hot water than we could use in the house.
Well, that's why I keep saying that there's any ever was going to be a evidence of over-unity, the internal combustion engine ought to be that, man. Because that thing, if you take away that cooling system, it'll destroy itself.
Only 5% of the power generated by combustion makes it to the rear wheels in your vehicle. Then 95% of it goes off in dissipated heat. And I'm telling you, that's one heck of a doggone hot water heater, and it's almost instant on demand. How long does it take for your car to warm up? Maybe 5 minutes?
Yeah,
man, that's better than any hot water heater, and all you'd have to do is just make a system where it put the water in and took it out at the same time, and the cooling fan would pull out the rest of the heat. That would go in your house and heat your house. So I'd have a little engine, and I put this towards Jermaine here. I keep calling him Jeremiah, but to Jermaine, that Lister engine running out there with a water jacket on it, that would supply all his hot water and his electricity and heat for the house, just keeping one running.
Well, that's what I was thinking about. If you could get even a little hydrogen cell just to run an old gasoline engine or something like that, right? And so you're not going to be getting the carbon monoxide danger to begin with, but since you're only going to be circulating water through that to use that water for your heat source, then the carbon monoxide wouldn't be a problem anyway. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
And so that engine wouldn't have to be able to pull a lot of torque. It wouldn't have to work real hard, other than if you're going to be running like a 100-amp alternator or something like that to charge batteries. What do you think?
Right.
I'll let old Jermaine answer, man. He ain't said... I don't think we gave him a
chance.
What's
your thoughts on it, Jermaine?
I think... If somebody can invent or make a carburetor that can turn the fuel into gas, it would be more efficient, less wasted energy, cleaner exhaust gases, right?
Yeah.
Better for the engine, longer duration of the engine, right?
Well, I did a video here a while back where I took a power drill and I was spinning up a weed eater motor. And what I was doing was, because basically an internal combustion engine is acting just like a compressor. And so everybody knows that if you compress air, that you will get heat. And if you compress anything, you'll get heat, you know. So while you're spinning this...
And cooling.
Yeah, when you're spinning this engine... when you're spinning this engine around, it's producing heat, which brings the cylinder temperatures up, you know, to over 160, 180 degrees. Now, the problem I had with the deal that I was doing was I couldn't get that doggone drill to push out enough torque to actually, you know, overcome the compression inside her. So at some point, it actually kind of slowed down. But if you took, before you use that drill, in between drill and that motor, had an electric motor that had a transmission that could, you know, change the gear ratio enough to overcome that torque. When you're spinning that motor in the same direction that it's going to be running, then... start injecting water in when the temperature gets up to operating temperatures. Once you inject that water in, it'll flash the steam, and you can see in this video where this weed eater motor, it was trying to turn over. You could see it bucking in there. It was actually trying to start. And if you got those operating temperatures up high enough, and you can flash that into steam, at some point between the compression and the heat inside there, you could actually separate the water molecules into the hydrogen and oxygen, and then the spark plug would be able to ignite that as fuel. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, if a person...
Make an HHO first, or either making it by the motor or whatever. Maybe you get it to run and then make its own HHO off and still get some excess heat.
Yeah, using the actual compression itself to, you know, you don't want to touch the top of an air compressor head because those things get hot.
Yeah.
And some of them have to be, all of them have to be oil cooled. Some of them have air coolers on there, but they have little oilers inside of them as well. But if you could spin that motor up with an electric motor that was, like a DC electric motor, permanent magnet motor, if you could spin that motor up long enough to get that operating temperature up high enough and then start injecting a fine mist of water in there, you could get that engine to kick over. At first, it would be acting like a steam engine, but the hotter it got, it would start to be able to separate the water molecules in and be able to ignite it. When that thing started to run like a hydrogen engine, it would overcome the RPMs of the electric motor and turn that motor into a generator. See, they got a deal on tractors, excuse me, that they call starter generators. And the starter itself, you turn your key on and it uses the starter portion to spin the motor over. Once the motor gets to running, because it's going in the same direction as the starter initially used to turn it over, then once the RPMs on that motor kick up, now that starter becomes a generator. You see what I'm saying?
Yep.
So you could do the same thing. You could use electricity to start the motor, to bring it up to operating temperature, inject water, fine water mist inside there. Once the operating temperature got high enough, you would use the heat to, when you initially put the little tiny bit of water inside there, water will expand 1,600 times its mass, and so that would press the piston down and start the process over again. And the faster this thing got to run, eventually you'd start burning that water on demand, and probably even have to cut back on how much water you're actually using. What do you think?
They put water in our gas lines to our houses. They put water in the gas, the natural gas, so that it burns hotter and faster, so you consume more. You can put water in the line. You gotta spray it in.
Well, that's the key to making that carburetor like Jermaine's talking about, is to be able to atomize that water into the finest mist possible. If you can do that, and that's another thing, if Raymond was around here, Raymond bought Raymond bought these vaporizers that basically use sonic technology to make a fine mist of water. You see what I'm saying?
Now, even Germany during the war, when they were trying to take over the world, like brain. Anyway, their diesel was such a poor quality, and to stretch it and actually get it to do something, they actually added water to their diesel and had it mixed with it. They had another chemical they put in there to help it mix with the diesel. Also, kind of like a hydro charger, it gave the engine more power because it had more compression as well. Plus, it burned better and gave them more mileage. So they were adding water to their diesel.
The farmers used to do that back in the day whenever fuel was getting too steep for them to be able to earn a living. They started injecting, they get the tractors up to operating temperature and start injecting small quantities of water in there to save fuel. So this isn't new technology. It's been around forever and a day.
Well, the supercharger is what they called them.
Yeah.
They've used them in racing and stuff like that as well.
Yeah.
So, what would it take to get the right people in the right shop to literally engineer an engine that was specifically designed not for horsepower, just to produce heat and run off of water? What do you think?
I know you can't put out an electrical fire with water. If you do that, it makes its own HHO gas, and the fire gets bigger.
Well, and there you go, right there.
Basic training from the military in a sub. You got an electrical fire, do not put it out with water.
There you go. There's a key right there. You get a hydrogen explosion from throwing water on electricity. It's not you getting electrocuted that you're worried about. It's that once you throw that water on electrical fire, you can get an instantaneous separation of the hydrogen and oxygen when it expands into steam, and then that ignition of that hydrogen and oxygen is what the problem is. My wife witnessed that firsthand when she tried to put out an electric fire in a stove. And I told her, I said, why didn't you just shut the door and turn the power off? Because I always told her to throw flour on a grease fire, to shut the power off for an electrical fire.
Or baking soda.
Yeah. But she got it backwards.
Put the lid on it.
First she threw flour in there, and that didn't work, and so she got panicked and threw water in there. What happened was the element inside the electric stove, I don't know if you guys are aware of this, but inside that ceramic element, there's a metal that when you heat that thing up, it gets molten inside there. So it actually liquefies the core of that deal. And if that ceramic gets chipped or scratched, that liquid will literally bubble out. And if there's anything flammable around it, catch it on fire.
Oh, I got to interject this. A guy took like a 5-gallon, one of them glass 5-gallon water jugs. And with diamond bits, he drilled a few holes so he'd have some long rods that had carbon in the tips of the bends. And he'd adjust this one lever to move sideways until you get it to arc with 36 volts worth of electricity from either 3 car batteries in series or a welding machine. And you get it to arc underwater. Now, this arc doesn't produce HHO. It something very close that they call Chantilly gas, but it makes this in liters per second. And the deal is this gas has carbon monoxide in it, but it only has it until you burn it. And when you burn it, the carbon monoxide goes away, and pretty much the byproduct of it is almost pure oxygen.
Hey, buddy.
And that will burn and put out one heck of a flame, and you can burn it inside your house without fear of losing your oxygen or carbon monoxide. You wind up with a higher content of oxygen in the air.
Buddy,
Yes.
Hold down the fort for a second. I gotta go find out something.
All right. I got my cables ready.
You got the show, bro.
Uh-oh. Go for me, too.
That ain't it.
Yeah, we call it Chantilly gas. You can burn that open flame inside your house if you wanted to. And that's something else. I'm not too sure about the efficiency of such, but man, I swear you could weld with it and do what you want, just like you would with HHO, but it is much, much faster. Pretty sure you could actually do it. If you had three alternators on your engine, on your car, you could probably make you a chamber that makes enough gas for your engine to run. You just expel the rest of it. Make sure it expels out the back end of the car so you aren't breathing the carbon monoxide. The funny thing is when the engine's running, you're not making carbon monoxide. It's when you slow down to an idle, you wind up with the carbon monoxide for excess gas. And it's something to think about. So what else? Hey, Jermaine, what's the status on that Lister engine you were telling me about now?
technically, it's all fine. We're just cleaning the outsides, and ready for painting tomorrow. So, yeah, increasing all the parts, get all the paint off, put some primer on it, and tomorrow we'll give it its color, its paint, final painting.
Lister engine doesn't have any air cooling bins; it has a water jacket, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so paint is not going to hold the heat in like it would on a motorcycle engine.
No. It's attached to a big water barrel. All
right.
So.
Now, if you made something like you took some cob, which is nothing but clay, a little straw, and dirt, and maybe just a small little portion of Portland, you put some big ducts on your exhaust or through the water deal there where you could heat up a mass amount of stone, which is the cob. You could generally heat your house with that. Any thoughts on that or any plans on that, or you think you might inject that to your father or something?
Hmm.
Storing the heat.
That's an idea.
I know. So what did I miss?
You didn't miss a doggone thing. But that 55-gallon drum, that water heats up pretty quick and starts getting too hot for the engine. You wind up having to shut it off, right?
Yeah, I think it's reasonably hot in 2-1.5 hours, maybe. If it's on the load, I reckon.
It wouldn't last that long. It'd be pretty neat if you had that water jack. That water going into the house to heat the house in the wintertime.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I was talking about as far as using water instead of electricity directly and that kind of stuff. If you go back and think about how the old radiators, you remember in school, Muddy, back when they had the radiator systems for the schools?
Right.
All they had was a boiler, and that boiler would circulate that steam up through that entire school.
Yeah, we couldn't wait to go back to the back of the classroom, act like he was doing something, and drop a crayon on them. Ours were multicolored, man.
Yeah.
It was purple. We enjoyed that.
But the key is,
what you missed was talking about the Lister engine running, and it has a water jacket, and he's basically... him and his father's got the outside cleaned up enough where you're just about to the stage where they're going to paint this old thing and then start running it. And I was thinking a regular motorcycle engine has air fins on it, but a Lister doesn't. It has a water jacket. And it would heat up a 55-gallon drum in an hour to an hour and a half. And what to do with that excess heat, he was thinking about, my thoughts were to run it through some piping and through some cob, to make a mass stone that would doesn't really get all that hot, but would store the energy for a long time and heat.
Yeah.
And it back. And what to do with the exhaust as well, it could probably do about the same thing. So that's what you missed.
I had always thought about lava rock, because lava rock is porous. And I'd always thought about If you could get that lava rock hot, I mean, I think they, to some extent, like in saunas, they use that to kind of produce steam inside saunas. Am I wrong?
That's because being porous, it has more surface area per size that you have.
And right.
It happens fast. It doesn't hold heat for a long time. Kind of like a stir using a stainless steel wool for a regenerator, which stores the heat and gets rid of it very fast.
Yeah, so I was thinking maybe I'm just visualizing this in my head with a 55-gallon drum full of like lava rock, something to kind of hold it like a thermos, so to speak. You see what I'm saying?
It'll definitely get rid of it fast, too, on demand.
Yeah.
Think of how much stew you could make in an hour and a half with that running. My 55 gallons, you could feed the neighborhood.
Well, if you could make mini boiler systems that, man, I could see so many different designs. If we had access to, foundry that you could actually pour, your own aluminum and build basically wood-burning stoves that had water jackets in them. See, I don't remember what the exact melting temperature of aluminum is. So, you really wouldn't want to get it, super hot, but what's the temperature, what is the temperature range that you'd be wanting to heat your house at anyway? You see what I'm saying?
Zinc melts even slower. Most of your paintings are just a thin copper-plated piece of zinc now instead of copper.
Well, your average car engine will run anywhere from 180, anywhere from maybe 180 to 220 degrees.
Right.
And you can generate enough heat off that car engine to keep that doggone cab of that car warm in the coldest temperatures out there. And so what I was thinking, using some of these, aluminum alloys that they got nowadays that will hold up to a lot more heat. You got to think about some of these engines that they run out there, like the four cylinders or whatever, that are made of mostly of aluminum. These things hold up to a lot of excruciating heat.
Now, imagine, what type of aluminum?
Some of the aluminum alloys that they use for modern day engines.
Yeah.
Yeah, they hold up to a lot of heat. And so I'm wondering if you couldn't actually turn at one of them blocks of an old engine that already had a built-in water jacket and a spot for a pump, turn one of them old engine blocks into a doggone heating system. You see what I'm saying?
It has been done. Downtown Phoebus, which was part of Hampton, Virginia.
Yeah.
There was a they had a big greenhouse. This guy that made flowers and roses and stuff like that and vegetables year round, right downtown. This thing was huge, and he had two layers of plastic, which gave it some thermal properties. But his electric heating was costing quite a bit, and basically, the elements would burn out, and he kept on having problems, and he had to wait for 7 days for another heating element to come in. He was fearing that he was going to lose all this stuff, and right outside, just outside the back door was a four-cylinder engine out of a old Datsun, and I said, does this run? And he says, yes, and I told him my experience with flushing the engine and all. I said, how many radiators do you have? Because he had vehicles out back. That's why that engine was sitting there. And it was already mounted down to two pieces of 4x4 just sitting on the ground. So what we did, we went to the parts store and got the doggone starter for that thing, fired it up, and ran radiators and put them right in front of the fans where the heating elements were. And it took quite a bit of fat tubing and all there, but basically it saved his life. Very happy camper, and from what I hear, he still uses it today. And off the 12-volt deal, he had a relay that would start the engine and start it up again until it got to temperature. So, I think as far as my friend Steve Petroff says, he's still happy and remembers me because he's still using it today. It seems to be cheaper than what he was using before.
The thing I was thinking about was where you wouldn't actually have to run that engine. You would actually use it as a almost like a wood burner, you know, where you take the cylinders and maybe even stack a couple of these doggone things on top of each other and send the exhaust of a wood burner up through those where the pistons would have been.
Right.
And basically heat that block up. And then, because you're not going to be bringing it up to a melting temperature of that aluminum, you're just going to bring it up hot enough to actually heat that block and then circulate your antifreeze through that. And so, you know, with antifreeze, you wouldn't even have to worry about it freezing up in the wintertime and busting your pipes. You know, just circulate antifreeze because you're not going to be drinking, you know, the water. You're just going to be using it to, you know, heat your house. But it seems to me that you wouldn't need very much firewood to keep that thing maintained, kind of like my redneck hot tub. It uses a coffee pot element, a little 110 coffee pot element, and a old swimming pool pump circulates that water through that element, and whereas it takes about 4 hours to get up to full temperature, once you get it up to temperature, it'll maintain that temperature easy. You know, you're not going to get it hot fast. Of course, I don't even think you get a regular hot tub hot fast.
Tell you what, you know, with the current situations around my that sit there and play with my own water and stuff like that, and I made an outdoor shower, and I've heated the water. I just take the whole coffee maker, I dunk it in the bucket of water, and 5-10 minutes later, my water's up to temperature, and I take the coffee maker out before I get in the shower. I'm not wanting to do the electrified funk dancer thing in the shower. But I tell you what, that water does get pretty warm, and me and the wife have taken many showers, enjoying it, and we bring our own water in, so it's kind of an off-grid water system. And I tell you what, just thinking about your hot tub and off that element, I mean, it's not like I'm circulating the water through the element, but I'd stick the whole thing in there. And then I just, by the plastic lid, I just pick it up, pull it out, set it to the side, and unplug it. That's a fast water heater. It's a nice fast. If I had an engine out here, I'd probably start it up and just get it on demand. But no problem.
Look around for a couple old Geo Metro motors. You know those little bitty cars that have like the little 3-cylinder motors in
them? Yep.
And I'm going to see if I can make an attempt with an aluminum block, and then I'm going to look around for a couple old metal blocks and see if I can't build a wood burner using that block as is, because like I said, the key is the water jacket, and it's already got a place for a standard water pump that you can buy at any hardware store or auto parts store.
Yeah, why design your own system when you can borrow somebody else's?
If you could send the exhaust up from a small wood burner through that and heat that block up and circulate water through it, that sounds to me like it'd be a pretty decent solution. What do you think?
That's exactly what I'm talking about. Good morning, Raymond. How are you?
Raymond.
That phone turned off because I didn't want to interrupt. I'm great. I like those conversations. I just got into it. I don't know what to talk about before, but
yeah, I just popped them in here by surprise.
Well, we're talking about heating, alternative heating methods, and so basically where we ended up is, you know, taking an old engine and either number one running it as a hydrogen engine to generate the heat, or basically turning one into a wood burning stove to generate the heat. So
you know, I like what you said, using a coffee pot to heat water, because I've taken several coffee pots, electric coffee makers apart. When I say several, I mean a lot, and looked at them, examined them. The thing is, they've already got their own built-in thermostat and everything. I mean, if you took it apart, the guts of it, and just add your own hot water heater, I mean, you could leave it on 24/7. It wouldn't matter.
Yeah, it's a little thing about the size of a resistor or a diode, and it's a temperature cutoff switch. And they've got another one there that's a bimetal disc that's basically concaved a little bit. When it gets hot enough, it flexes the opposite way and turns the switch off and back.
Holy smokes, Raymond, you just gave me a brilliant idea. If I can do that on a doggone scale such as my redneck hot tub, what's to stop me from getting a small heater core and circulating water through that coffee pot element and turning that into a heater? Because the coffee pot only takes 110 volts to run, but you can get a lot of heat out of that thing.
Well, you know, the average coffee pot or coffee maker runs at about 600 watts. So if you took two of them, put them together, you'd heat the water twice as fast, and you'd be below 1,500 watts, which would run very well on the average plug. You know,
I'd say 1,500 watts.
But the key is that once that water got up to the operating temperature, it wouldn't take much to maintain it.
Not very little, especially if you had it well insulated. Yep. You could make your own hot water heat.
Wow. So I'm thinking that might just be something worth looking into. I got plenty of coffee pots around here I can test on. And if I can build a, basically the one that run off the equivalents of a coffee pot.
Right.
You know, that's pretty impressive. But these other heaters that we've got around here, the space heaters, that they anywhere from 500 watts, 700 watts to I think 1500 watts. And those things, they'll suck down the juice, man, but they don't seem to be that efficient. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, you know, I lived in a 18-foot trailer camper, trailer for 8 years, and it only had a 6-gallon hot water heater on it, which was gas, and I learned very easily how to take a shower, clean my whole entire body, shampoo my hair twice, and conditioner, and still have enough hot water to shave with.
Well,
6 gallons of hot water, so 5 gallons would be more than sufficient, and you can get a 5-gallon glass water bottle and a couple diamond bits and drill holes in it, and JB weld all the pipe and pieces of the coffee pot to it, and insulate it very well, and you got yourself a nice hot water heat.
Let me run a theory across to you. Okay. Tell me what you think. Now, if I said that you could actually heat your entire house with the equivalent of one coffee pot, first off, it'd sound too good to be true and it'd sound too crazy. But if you get to thinking about what I just talked about with the redneck hot tub, that's quite a few gallons of water that out there in the open air, even in the wintertime, that you can get that thing up so hot that you can't sit in it.
Right.
And so, I'm sitting here thinking, why couldn't you circulate water through your entire house, through that coffee pot, into a storage tank that would keep that heat there at like a battery, and then use radiator systems through your entire house? Now, granted, it'd take you a long time to get it up to operating temperature, but once you've got it up there, what's to stop you from turning that into a heating system?
The same thing that would stop you from heating hot water to take a shower with and leave it on 24/7 and it not cost you a lot of money. That's the only problem is the insulation. If you're going to heat the house with a coffee pot, you could do it. It is possible. It will work if your house is sealed up, good and tight, and very, very well insulated.
Yeah.
It won't go anywhere.
But well, if you start that insulation
around your doors and windows,
insulation, you can heat anything. You can heat anything up if it's
insulation in your floor.
One other note is I also have a friend who built his house, and before he built his house, before he laid the concrete down, he ran plastic tubing all the way through, back and forth, all the way through this entire floor. And the idea was that once he got his wood stove going, that he would circulate water through that floor, and the heat would rise up through the floor. And literally, you could walk in there in the dead of winter barefoot on that floor, that concrete floor, and it's warm. So, a coffee pot element circulating water through the entire floor of the house would bring that heat, you know, because heat rises. So why couldn't you, before, when you design the floors of your house, run tubing all the way back and forth through that doggone deal and then circulate that water through your entire floor of your house? And have it set up so that just in case the doggone element went bad, all you'd have to do is buy the standard coffee pot and pull the element out and put it back in.
You wouldn't even need a pump.
Everything you're saying is absolutely true and positively fantastic. But, again, I have to say it again, okay? You've got to be sure that your house is sealed and very well insulated. Otherwise, you could build a bonfire in the middle of your living room and the bedroom's still going to be cold.
Well, I agree. Now, there's a lot of good foam insulation out there that got some really good R factors in there.
Yeah, if your house was built deep, if the house was built like a thermos, you could probably cook yourself with a coffee.
I'm going to make an attempt to build a coffee pot heating system just to see if it'll work. I'm gonna try it in my own room just to see if it'll work and build a radiator for it and see what I get, because the heat that's actually coming through that doggone coffee pot, man, it's incredible. And the wattage used is a lot less than one of these doggone space heaters.
You wouldn't need a water pump for that system. That rubber hose is coming from each end, and you wouldn't have to worry about the risk of electrocution or anything either. But you keep that element full of water, and the one that outputs, basically you run a vertical tube and let the top of that be open, and somewhere down the line go over to the other edge. As the water boils and makes bubbles, it'll pump the water up the vertical and go to the other one, dropping back off into your tank.
Yeah, but see, the reason why I used the water pump was because I took the little percolator check valve out.
Yeah.
The percolator check valve, basically, if you left that in there, your system would work perfectly. You just have this annoying coffee pot sound as it's percolating, sending, you'd have a water hammer.
Right.
But either way, it would work without a pump, and so that's you just cut the electric bill in half as far as the system that I'm talking about.
Right.
Because it would pump itself through the system. That's brilliant, man.
If on my coffee pot, if I wasn't so lazy, the one that I drilled holes in the side of, if I took silicone and insulated all the electrical connections.
If you build it like Shazilla says, you would have to...
I wouldn't need a pump. I'd just put it right in the tank, and I wouldn't have any risk of electrocution or anything.
Yeah.
You definitely would not need a pump. It was just simply designed to use thermal siphon.
Yeah, so the coffee pot element already has the part necessary to do that.
Exactly.
It's a little check valve, the little percolator check valve. It holds water in there long enough for the water to get really boiling hot and spits it out the other side.
You know, now when water gets hot, it expands or it builds pressure.
Yeah.
So you need I don't even know what it's called, but it's like an air trap. In other words, you build your systems in a circle. So, not necessarily a round circle, but you know what I'm talking about. But where you fill your pipe, you would want a piece of pipe larger and maybe a foot too high. And you would cap it with a valve. You fill it up that way and through nothing in the system but water, except in your large pipe that's vertical where your valve is. That would be air, and that would give you the expansion of the heating of the water. And for it be like cushion, like you said, as far as the water actually boils, it bursts into steam, and like you said, it's a hammer, a water hammer.
Yeah.
Well, you have to get rid of that that pressure by it compressing the air in the larger pipe. Does that make sense?
Yeah. When I talk about the possibilities of heating your entire house with a coffee pot, it sounds so crazy. But if you look at that hot redneck hot tub, like I said, I was out there in the dead of winter. There was snow on the ground, and I was hot inside that doggone tub. Literally, that's it, there's heat going out into the air. The water's out in the open, everything, and it still remained that hot. So, like I said, it'd take you longer to heat start and get it started heated up. But once you got it up to operating temperature, all you have to do is basically maintain it with basically the equivalence of a coffee pot.
Right.
I think that's worthy of looking into. What do you guys think?
I think it is. I know it is.
So, it wouldn't be hard to get the parts together, because go down to your local pick and pull salvage yard and find an old heater core, preferably something out of a van. You know, they got those dual heating systems.
Yeah.
That, they have their own like heater core in the back of the van or something like that. And just actually have their own heat box.
Yeah.
It's a small heater core. Probably
it's out of a house with no air conditioner that doesn't work anymore.
Yeah.
Since you get so set food both on the inside and set for the outside.
Yeah. Any radiator.
Yeah, any radiator system would work.
You could even use the 12-volt fan that goes behind it.
Yep.
And the radiator would work good, too, because it would have a safety device already built into it, which is the cap that you put over there when you lift the cap up. It's pressurized so that if the radiator fluid gets too hot, it will push that deal up and let it go out into the overflow.
Right.
Hey, buddy.
On top of that, the metal energy of the radiator is already set for something that the engine's set for, so that it doesn't corrode if you use your antifreeze and everything the way you normally do and stop using the water from the faucet.
Buddy.
Yeah, buddy.
Hey, your idea of using a 12-volt fan? No. You're the perfect man. Build a Stirling engine. The hot water runs the Stirling engine, and the Stirling engine is a fan that blows the heat off the Stirling engine.
And turns the pump.
Of it.
It uses the existing heat. You can transfer it through to warm up another spot off the cold plate.
Hey, well, guys, I think we got our next project. And yeah. I think Jermaine could help out with this.
Uh-huh.
All right. Muddy knows how to build a Stirling engine. Jermaine knows how to build a solenoid engine. And Raymond's got some Peltier elements.
Yeah.
And I got knowledge in boilers and stuff like that. So all of us combined together could literally build a combination Stirling engine, solenoid engine. And here's what I'm thinking. All right, so you're going to start off boiling your water with the coffee pot, all right? And that coffee pot element still has a plate attached to the top of it. You can put your Stirling engine on top of that, all right? And that Stirling engine will be used to turn a pulley that will, in turn, turn the water pump to get the water started circulating, right? And then from that point on, you could have Peltier elements that were strategically put out through there that would produce electricity that would run the solenoid motor that Jermaine built, right?
And you totally do not need a water pump.
Yeah.
Thermal siphoning. It's a natural phenomenon.
I understand what you're saying, but are you visualizing what I'm telling you here?
Yes.
We're going to be reusing the same energy multiple times through the process, and in order to, when you finally get to the to Jermaine's portion, which is the solenoid motor, when that energy from that Peltier element from the heat exchange charges up a capacitor bank, it will pulse that solenoid motor, which when the field on that solenoid motor collapses will then in turn push out some high voltage out the back end of the field. So you could take that energy from the coffee pot, turn the Stirling engine, generate electricity from the Peltier elements, hit that solenoid motor, when the field collapses on the solenoid motor, and drops back down, producing AC voltage out the other side. If it was produced properly and had multiple cylinders of that solenoid, you could probably generate enough energy to run another coffee pot. What do you think?
Pretty close to it.
Sounds like 25% of the original engine output actually, or the 25% of the original input is what you're working on, so you wouldn't be able to run a whole one.
Well, at least you could supplement the one.
Electrical to mechanical, and then mechanical to electrical at 50%. If that's actually feasible.
Sure, there's going to be some losses.
Loss on both, you wind up with 1/4 of the energy.
Sure, there's going to be some losses, but even if you only put 1/4 of the energy back that you're using to run it to begin with, you just made it more efficient.
No, you lost 75% is what I'm getting at.
I understand that, but you still said you had 1/4 left.
That's after using everything you originally generated.
Yeah. So, if you put that 1/4 back towards running the initial system, then you just made it more efficient, right?
I guess if you can get all the excess heat, maybe.
That's what I'm talking about.
Okay.
Sealing it all up into one sealed unit to wherever there's heat loss, insulate the crud out of it and use Peltier elements and the atmosphere outside around it to generate some DC voltage, and then use the solenoid from that DC voltage and the collapsing of that field to actually generate some AC voltage. Worst case scenario, you get a nifty gizmo that's reusing a lot of waste energy.
Yeah.
Didn't say you're going to be able to get it to completely run itself, which I think if it was engineered properly, would be possible. See what I'm saying?
Yep. A lot of factories get these companies to come in, and they spend hundreds of thousands of dollars to install Stirling engine heat recovery. And basically, so like an aluminum foundry, after they've melted the aluminum, what do they do with that heat? They throw it outside.
Well,
in order to basically save a lot of that energy and put it back into their electricity, they've got a lot of Stirling engine applications where they take that heat, or even boil water with it for steam as well. But they know that Stirling engines are much more efficient and recover a lot of the energy and turn it back into the grid.
It doesn't take much to produce high voltage. A transistor pulsing a coil, the back spike of the coil will give you high voltage. And if you took some points from what Gerard Morin had been doing out there with the transformers and stuff, you could use one of these doggone transformers as a storage bank for that high voltage spike. AC capacitors and DC capacitors alike. You follow me, man?
Yep.
So,
on those energy recovery things there, you're only getting maybe a 50 to 25%, but that's energy that they would have wasted already. Kind of reminds me of a guy named John that showed Boomer a whole bunch of these broken solar panels and everything. He was talking to Boomer and showing amperage on these suckers, direct shorted amperage, and then showing the open voltage and saying that's what the wattage was. And I was trying to tell him, no, you got to hook it up to a battery where it pulls the voltage down and then show the amperage going into the battery, and that's how many amps you got left. So he was trying to show 75% wattage of what the original panel was, and I was telling him, after what I was finding, 25%. John wouldn't talk to me no more, and he kept talking to Boomer about open voltage and shorted amps. And, you know, don't talk to me no more. So,
if there was a way that we could get all of us...
What I'm saying is I like to be real about the power output and what you get. But it's definitely gaining.
If it's 25% or 10%, they're free.
That's right. Exactly. And that's
going to cost you the time and your gasoline to haul off.
Yep, that's free energy. Exactly what I was making my point to get to. If it's already available and it's already there and it's going to be wasted, grab some of it.
That's what I've been saying. If we could get all of us for 30 days in the same doggone lab, we could put this stuff into action. Man, go out and raid the junkyard together. Find things in the junkyard and the doggone hardware stores. And put this stuff together. Because even what Justin was doing is doing over there with the magnets going across the deal, if you got a solenoid motor that has some kind of torque like Germain's did, now I know his solenoid motor has torque because you can watch it. You can physically see the wobble on that thing. If it's sitting here rocking that thing back and forth because it's not precisionally made on a lathe or something like that, then you know that thing's got some torque available to it.
Yeah, he didn't know how many RPMs he was getting. So I got it. We were on the other night, and I said, "We'll run that thing again." And I sat there and counted the strokes per second that he's kicking out 360 RPMs on that bad boy. Not bad at all.
Well, when I saw it, most folks would have looked at that and they would have said, "Oh, well, you know, that's just junk." No, I saw some physical reaction going on that showed me that thing had torque.
Uh huh.
And so, with that said, if it's got torque and it can spin a magnet flywheel past the copper plating like Justin was talking about, and you got this water that's already being heated up by the coffee pot element that is now going through the secondary system that's being heated by magnets, you could boost that heat up. You see what I'm saying?
Yup. I was telling Germain if he'd go by an old transmission shop and get some of the used solenoids out of there for shifting second and fourth and first and third. Those things would really kick. But, you know, Germain built his own. He built from scratch the whole solenoid.
I know, it's impressive.
Oh, yeah, extremely. He's a heck of a fabricator.
I couldn't hit that like button fast enough when I saw that motor working. And I wanted to tell everybody and his brother about it. And so I did. But
because of his unique position and his upbringing with his dad, he's learned a lot of fabrication. I mean, I was a goldsmith and a silversmith, and I've tapped stuff out. Now, he taps out giant sheets of copper stuff with nothing but his hammer. And you know, I'm sure he does like I used to. I used to take a fine file across there and get everything perfect smooth and polished.
Yeah.
And he knows all about getting the end of his hammer perfectly flat with just a little bit of a curve on it and polishing it and get it there. And he was telling me when he's done, he says his first job there, he thought it was perfect, and he'd look at it nowadays and he can see. But now, through his experience, it comes out looking like glass. Now that's a man with some skills. And I mean, what? He's a teenager. But I tell you what, man, he's got more skill than a lot of these goldsmiths that I see around here.
So Raymond,
my hat's off to Mr. Fishwick, especially fabrication.
Yeah, he's impressed me. Raymond's got, he was talking about how you didn't have to have a water pump to circulate this water using thermal siphoning, which is correct, and also what I was talking about using the Pelletier elements and the back spike off of the solenoid motor. Also, when you got a heating system, you need a fan system as well. So you could use that energy to generate enough power to run the fan across the radiator. You see what I mean?
We can use Stirling engine.
Yeah, the Stirling engine or a combination of the Stirling engine and the solenoid motor.
The thing is about Stirling engine, you heat one side, you cool the other. Okay, but it runs a motor. Well, you put the fan on the motor so it cools the other side faster. Therefore, you heat up the bottom faster.
Yeah.
I think one of the most efficient water pumps.
The electricity you would use is for the heating element of the coffee pot only. Everything else would run off the heat itself.
Yep. Or you could use the bubbles off the boiling of the water, which expels a little steam. But like I was saying, the most efficient is a fish tank bubbler.
Yes.
With a funnel, with the point facing up. It grabs water as the bubbles go up, and that part's light, so it circulates the water.
Yep.
Well, look, I know everybody's concerned about using the terminology over unity or whatever. I'm not looking for over unity. I'm looking for efficiency. So maybe the terminology we should be looking at as far as this device that we're talking about building is to make it as efficient as physically possible.
Yep.
I mean, look at the rocket stoves. It's nothing but the convection and the heat going up that draws more air only to the spot where you're burning, supplying it with massive amounts of oxygen to sit there and burn everything like the catalytic converter does. What the secret to the catalytic converter is heat and catalyst, but the extreme heat makes sure that it burns all of it. And that's the main thing. Now, the rocket stove, because it has a blue really all that long, using that convection and bringing the oxygen only to the spot that it burns, makes it very efficient.
So I wonder if anybody's ever tried to put steam up in through a catalytic converter.
It makes a lot of the other stuff stick to it, and eventually clogs it up. But if it's hot enough, it takes the steam right off, but it leaves the deposits, and those deposits will burn until you don't have enough temperature. Then it will clog it.
So what if you don't do that? What if you put dry electrical heat? Everybody knows that electric heat seems to dry everything out around it. So what if you took, like, a hair dryer, for example, and blew that into a catalytic converter? Could you actually get that catalytic converter to start storing heat off of that hair dryer that would make that catalytic converter too hot to touch?
No.
Did you say no?
I said yes. Matter of fact, where we had flooding after Hurricane Isabel, a lot of the cars, people scrapped their cars, got rid of their cars, all because the catalytic converter wound up having water in it. And the cure for that was basically you could take your catalytic converter off and put it in your doggone barbecue and heat that sucker up. And it pumped some air through it and a little bit of flame until it cleared out, and then you can stick that thing back on, saving you about $750. And the same thing on some weed eaters, man. Where it wasn't burning efficient, a lot of carbon clogged up the muffler. You could take the muffler off, stick it in the barbecue, and just burn the fire out of it, stick it back on your weed eater, or just take the thing off and leave it off and have a loud weed eater. We went around after the hurricane just picking up everything. Refrigerators, chest freezers, lawnmowers, weed eaters, and anything that had an electric motor in it. We just basically 5 to 10 minutes worth of work on pretty much everything, and we were putting it right back outside for sale because it was running perfect. So, I mean, yeah, just unclogging. See, if you can't get air out of your motor, you can't get air into your motor. And it's just the same as putting your hand over the car and choking it out.
You know, I'm sitting here listening to everybody troubleshooting all this stuff, man, and I'm like, we got all the answers that we need to literally build the perfect device, man. We know how things function. We know where they fail. And so what's to stop us from actually putting it into practice and going down to the salvage yard? You know what? I'd take this crew right here against any one of those guys and gals out there on the other side of the fence that do that junkyard wars.
Junkyard wars.
Yeah. I'd take this crew right here, we'd go in there and we'd put the laws of physics over to the side there and say, watch this. This is how much heat you can get from a catalytic converter, you know.
To Jermaine, are you going to put an axial flux generator on that Lister engine by any chance?
Never thought about it.
Go to otherpower.com and look for the Lister engine. They've got one there, and pretty much it's got all the details, what size magnets, the discs, the whole schmear, how many windings of what gauge wire, and it's all air core, and it's 97% efficient rather than 45% efficient like a normal generator. Show that to your dad after you've found it.
And
y'all will enjoy that.
And what I want to do is, like, you have so you have the motor block, and then you have barrel, and there is rubber hose that connects the two. But if you take the rubber hose off, and you use multiple copper pipes, and you bend it, in the comminizer, make an comminizer, and then you can just hang a bucket with water,
right.
Because I know the water gets hot. That's being heated by the engine, but it isn't very tasty to drink or safe to drink because there's all rust in it. But if you let the water go through pipes, and that pipe heats up a bucket of clean water,
right?
Yeah.
Stainless steel tubing makes if coiled up makes a great heat exchanger, doesn't it, Bowman?
It's better because it doesn't corrode like copper does.
Right, it doesn't bleed anything off.
Yeah.
Well, for what we're talking about doing, you're not going to be drinking the water for heating purposes, but there ain't no reason why we couldn't expand on that and take some of that waste heat off to heat water, that you could drink.
And what can you do with the vacuum? Because, like, with the Lister engine, the vacuum in the crankshaft area, or in, I don't know what that area is called, or in space, but it compresses it and it makes a vacuum, but there is just a pressure release valve,
so all this
energy is just being lost.
If you take away from your vacuum, you take away the efficiency of the oxygen going in and burning. I wouldn't play with the vacuum side.
Okay.
Well, why couldn't you make a system that could do both, man? I mean, if it's got a vacuum on there, and you pulled that vacuum through, wasn't you, Muddy, the one that told me about water temperature boils less temperature in a vacuum?
That's Dr. Raymond Head's expertise right there.
Oh, maybe it was Raymond said it.
Mm-mm-mm.
That's why he's got Boomtown Laboratories.
But Muddy, I don't mean the vacuum the piston makes where the fuel mixes and the combustion area, but I mean on the other side of the piston in the crankshaft.
Okay, you're changing your back pressure.
Back pressure, that's the word I was looking for.
You have to readjust your fuel mix to its most efficient, and I wouldn't change the rate at which it takes your pressure, your vacuum, and I'd take that also through a diaphragm that only uses the pulse of the differential and pressure.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't change it after you've readjusted. Other than that, you're messing your fuel mixture up.
Why couldn't you make a vacuum pump that you could actually use as an accessory to that motor that you could use? Well, I can hear the crickets chirping on that. But you got a water pump that pumps your water. You got an alternator that, all of them run on belt systems, but what if you wanted a vacuum pump to basically vacuum down a chamber?
So you're talking about the old vacuum storage going to your vacuum windshield wipers as in the days of old on trucks and stuff, correct?
Yeah.
Right. That people noticed the difference in the fuel mileage when their windshield wipers were running, or you had when you got a vacuum leak, you wind up... less gas mileage, a big drop of gas mileage.
Life stinks.
You'd have to readjust. Now, some people had their mixture set up differently, and they noticed that during the rain they got better gas mileage because they were sucking in a lot more air into the car.
Well, either way, there's a lot of forces going on when that engine's running. And a lot of wasted energy. far as I'm concerned, I'll say it again, if there was ever proof of overunity, the internal combustion engine would be that, because of all the different wasted energy that you got, and an actual percentage of the energy that you get from using the fuel. Because if you need a catalytic converter on the engine, then that tells me you're not burning that fuel properly if you have to have a reburner to burn off the waste.
That's true, and I have to rephrase part of that. If you're running your engine lean, where you're getting more oxygen in than you need, then running the windshield wipers actually made it more efficient, but not efficient if you didn't have all of that maladjusted and using the windshield wipers. So any energy that you use on the input going to the motor is an inefficiency. And your catalytic converter, if your smog pump isn't working, which basically your smog pump just takes some of what comes out of the valves, the valve covers and all that, and throws that down there along with some more oxygen to raise the oxygen content to the catalytic converter so that it would actually burn things that weren't burned in the piston.
Here's a crazy idea for you. Has anyone of y'all ever thought about this? You know, underneath the piston where the combustion isn't, there's a basically a pocket oil down there, right? Where your oil pan and all that is.
Yeah.
Well, what's to stop anybody from building a generating system using the bottom of that piston, like somehow mounting magnets on the bottom of that system and actually putting coils up underneath the cylinders themselves, that as you are running that engine, you got it generating electricity, and that oil that's slopping up on that coil up underneath there that normally is keeping the bearings and everything lubricated would actually help to keep that doggone insulation from breaking down on the electric wires, because it'd keep it cool. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
You could also just mount some magnets on the flywheel, just like Justin said.
Yeah.
With,
Yep, and then you wouldn't need a fan belt for your alternator.
There's another brilliant deal that Justin threw out there.
Direct.
That engine that you're, you could take any motor out here, I don't care what motor it is, without the transmission, you don't got enough horsepower to take you anywhere. All right, and so with that said, if you mounted a magnetic flywheel on the back of any engine, you could use that process like Justin's using to literally heat water, spinning those magnets across a coil. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, that fan belt uses or drops your efficiency down about 30% because of all the friction in it. Direct drive, making an axial flux out of your flywheel is an awesome idea.
Brilliant.
And if you're using air coils, then you wind up getting around 97% efficiency. That's excellent.
Well,
when your engine's running very high RPMs, you're generating a lot more electricity than you need. So you'd have to, at different speeds, go through different relays to adjust your voltage. Because your car alternator actually has a field winding that spins off of brushes, and it is regulated by the battery of the voltage that comes straight from the battery to tell how many amps to flow through there, and it is self-regulating. No matter what RPM you're at, the voltage changes so that there's only so much current going through that field winding. But seeing as everything in there is not air core, and you're using electricity to make the magnetism to amplify the electricity that you've got, your car alternator is only 5% efficient, where an axial flux is 97% efficient. So I'd work on that. Maybe even, like I said, just going through transformers, which would drop your efficiency down a little bit, but not down to 5%, more like 45%.
Mm-hmm.
That's a decent idea. If you're going to be running an engine at a certain RPM, like a helicopter does, and they only change the pitch of the blades, something like that would work wonderfully.
Well, what I'm seeing right here, you really wouldn't have to run that doggone engine like you would be as if you was trying to push a transmission with it. you just basically run it at idle speed. The RPMs on that motor, you know, the tip speed, if you think about like the automatic transmission flywheel, or, you know the flywheel on the back of the motor that has the gears that your actual starter connects to?
Correct.
Yeah. Well, the tip speed on that, if you had your magnets at the edge of those doggone things, would be ridiculous. And you wouldn't really have to run it fast, just run it at idle, you know?
And use a torque converter instead for your gearing.
Yeah. To me, it's a no-brainer, man. If you can get a doggone car to run on water, first off, that's a plus. And if you take that energy that you know you're going to generate with it to not only heat water, but take every bit of waste energy off of that, look at the car. Look at the internal combustion engine real hard. All right? When you start it up, you're using the fuel to start it up. All right? You use the fuel to keep it going. But you don't want, once you got it started, it don't take that much fuel to maintain it. All right? And you could actually, by bringing that fuel to its maximum potential, vaporizing it before you ever even put it into the system, you're going to get the maximum amount of use out of less fuel. And so you just made it more efficient. But
that's the thing. Making a carburetor that can vaporize the fuel.
Yeah, that's what Raymond was working on.
Right, heating the fuel and using the fumes. That's that carburetor that they had years ago that GM put on the shelf after they bought it from the guy that was supposed to get you 125s and in some cases 200 and 300 miles per gallon. It was big tougher, and basically all it was a spiral of wicked gasoline that would run up to the rippled filter paper type deal, and it would just put nothing but fumes off and regulate how much of air was going into that and how much extra air it needed to get to a premium mix and go into the motor. But they were literally driving on fumes, and that's an awesome way to do, rather than spraying, and it's still not completely atomized. The best atomization that you can get is fumes, and get it to the right mix. That's all that was just air running through a spiral of filter paper material and taking the fumes off and running that directly into the carb.
It was Charles Foucault in the mid-1930s that invented a carburetor that did exactly that, run the engine off the fume. It was one liter of fuel to that. Without the lid and the gasoline, the valves would burn out, the valve seats would burn out. Now, with the invention of chrome moly valves, valve seats, you don't have to have lead in the gasoline. So consequently, the modern day automobile will run on fumes way better than the old Model V Ford.
So,
right. Exactly. That's the carb I was talking about.
So answer me this question. You know, I know they got hybrids out there, hydrogen hybrids out there that start the doggone thing with gasoline and run off of water technology, hydrogen technology, after it gets up to speed. That's no different than what I was talking about, basically turning a internal combustion engine, using it like an air compressor, generating the heat, and then injecting water into the system in a really super fine mist. That's where that vaporizer thing that you had showed me, Raymond, would come in handy, because you could vaporize the water before you ever even sent it into the deal, and that's where Jermaine's deal about the vacuum would come in handy, because you could use the vacuum to suck the vapor into the carburetor.
Right.
All that works, but then you it's a trade-off for efficiency, but not that much.
I don't think there's any trade-off at all if it's engineered properly, because if you think about what I'm saying right here, every carburetor out there has vacuum lines on it. Even throttle bodies have vacuums on there. So, if you don't have a regular carburetor and you got electronic fuel injection, you still have vacuums that open and close certain things in time to mix the air and fuel. So,
In the early 1950s, the Encyclopedia Britannica stated in black and white that the modern-day carburation system is the most inefficient carburation system ever, ever invented or devised by man.
You know what we need to try, Raymond?
What's that?
We need to get that vaporizer thing that you got and try to get a gasoline engine up and running. Because which one of you guys, I think it was either Muddy or you, that one of you guys had mentioned one time if you had noticed how much better your car runs in the fog than it does in regular weather.
Oh, Lord, yeah, it'll run a lot better.
All right, so imagine this. You get a gasoline engine up to running, and then you actually use one of the vacuum lines off of the carburetor to suck that vapor of water into the carburetor.
It's simple. I didn't make a video of it. I should have. I've got a sonic humidifier. And what it does is it doesn't actually turn the water into a vapor. It turns it into a mist. That's what you want. It's a vapor.
Yeah.
It's already. It doesn't do you any good. You don't want a heat-activated humidifier. You want a sonic humidifier, which actually makes a fog. It's little teeny tiny droplets of water, so small that it actually float in the air. You want water. You don't want a vapor. Water
so,
vapor.
So that
you want the heat to turn the water to vapor.
That could be the answer right there, man.
Yep. I have taken my sonic humidifier and placed it beside a 6.5 horsepower hot motor, and I pull it away from it, and the motor's running. I put the vaporizer up to it so it sucks droplets of water, and all of a sudden the engine starts running really smooth, has way more power, at least 10 to 15% more power. And that's what water vapor. 1 liter of water vapor, or humidifier, droplets, fog, whatever the heck you want to call it, we'll use the proper words. 1 liter will run that engine for over an hour and a half. I mean, at 15% more horsepower.
I'd be willing to bet that once you got that engine up to operating temperature, you could shut the fuel off of the doggone gas and run that sucker off of water vapor.
Both of you can do that or possible. I really don't know if you can do that.
Well, the reason I'm saying this, and I know I sound crazy, but the reason I'm saying this is because if you look at that video where I was spinning that doggone weed eater motor up to operating temperature, when that thing got hot enough and the water vapor started coming in there, you could see that thing start to buck. It was trying to turn over. It was definitely kicking those pistons.
I'm a firm believer if you can take water vapor and electrolyze it, you can burn it direct.
Well, that's basically what I'm saying. Once you get the pressure up inside that cylinder hot enough, and it starts to flash into steam, what's the next stage after steam?
Oh, now I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Water fuel. Put a diesel engine, I mean, really compress it hard, really tight, so the water would heat up. Then when it broke over dead top center, as it came down and relieved that pressure, the water itself would be so hot, it would automatically burst into steam.
Yep.
And on the downstroke. Lord, yes.
And you vapor like
possible. Yeah. Not impossible.
Into vapor like fumes, yes.
Yeah. And then what's the next stage after steam? When it's already expanded into steam and you still got that compression going on, it's going to start breaking down that water. When it breaks down that water, you could start using an ignition system to hit any hydrogen or stray oxygen inside there.
Yep.
So I'm saying I honestly believe that with that vaporizer system, the sonic vaporizer, and any internal combustion engine, that you could start that thing off with regular gasoline, get it up to operating temperature. Once that thing was hotter than all get out, and you started letting that open the valve up for the vaporizer to allow the vacuum to suck that vapor into the combustion chamber, And then as soon as that vapor hit that doggone hot cylinder, it would expand 1,600 times its volume, press that piston down, and keep it rolling.
Right. We have what they call an ultrasonic cleaner. Now, ultrasonic cleaners can do nice vaporizers.
You know, you're a Martian.
Those are nothing but elements.
Hey, diesel engines have a glow plug in them. That would probably work a whole lot better because diesel engine has a way more compression, enough compression to ignite the diesel fuel itself without a glow plug.
Yeah.
So if you have the glow plug in it, then it would compress it and heat it up even more. You put a hotter glow plug, get it super hot.
Well, it was diesel tractors that they were injecting water into.
And engines. Steam on demand. Woohoo! I love it.
So why couldn't this be done, man?
It could. There's no why it could be done.
I think with diesel, the ultrasonic frequency, with the vacuum that the engine is drawing, would make enough vapor to make one run.
There you go.
You can even throttle it up by simply having my sonic humidifiers, they have a dial on them. You turn them way up where they just boil water out of there. I mean, man, this should come out of it. You turn it down. The more you turn it down, the less water you have going through the diesel engine, the less power you're going to have. So you can actually throttle the thing up and down.
And a big enough positive plate inside that where your spark plug would be enough to sit there and ignite it evenly, make it kick.
Yes.
Alright,
does anybody... change timing. The only thing you'd have to do is change your timing.
Does anybody have access to somebody who rebuilds starters that, for some reason a starter has a lot of torque. I mean, when you think about how much power a starter has to have in order to turn that flywheel over to spin that
I
motor
have starter.
Up.
And yes, I do.
All right,
we
check
have
us
starter.
Out. If you could get just a weed eater motor, just a weed whacker, weed eater, whatever you want to call it, and you could have somebody take and modify, build basically the equivalence of a starter onto that output shaft that would normally be turning the deal that got your weed string on there, you know, the head of the weed eater, and use electricity to start spinning that motor as an air compressor. When you got that motor up to operating temperature, use a sonic vaporizer to basically start using the vacuum of that engine to suck the mist inside that engine. If what I'm thinking is possible, you can turn a weed eater motor into a doggone motor generator. You see what I'm saying?
Yep.
There's a guy down here named last name of Biggerstaff. He's got his own alternator starter company, rewinding and rebuilding and stuff like that. We go in there, and now this guy is long-winded, and I mean he will tell you old fish stories. He's just glad to have you in there. So much that you'll be in there for 2 or 3 hours just ordering your parts. So not he doesn't have that much business, and most of his stuff is from around the world. But we get to talking, and we get off the fish stories, and we get to talking alternators and generators, and we start educating each other, and it gets to even longer. So it's 5 hours for me to order a part. Go down there every now and then, and he says with Hall Effect sensors, we can take these axial flux alternators and actually turn them into starters as well, direct driven, and make them work very efficiently, and then use them as a generator, and how much fuel you put into is how much amps you're going to wind up getting, because it will try to stay at the same RPM. So we've gone through that much and learned that much off each other. Very good old gentleman. I expect him to not be alive next year, because he sits in his wheelchair pretty much, and he gets out of it very rare. But like I said, bigger staff, might as well be bigger conversations. Definitely a source of knowledge.
Does anybody know what type of fuel they use in the little RC airplanes?
Justin does, nitro.
Alright, let me ask you a question. if we want to do this on a small scale just to show provability, we could take one of those RC plane motors and find the best RC electrical motor that has a lot of torque to it. Because if you ever watch some of these little remote control cars, these things, they got some really serious torque and speed to them. Why couldn't we take and test this out using RC motors, electric motors, and RC gas airplane motor, and build a little motor generator that once you got that thing spun up and that the head of that airplane motor got hot enough that you could start injecting water in instead of the fuel that you did before?
That's high RPM.
They burn a lot. They burn a lot, like a lot.
Of course they do, but they get hot enough you can't touch them, right?
They do get hot, but they don't get that hot. It's the RPMs. They just suck.
You scream.
They scream, man. They suck. They suck everything. I get like for a half a liter, I get about 20 minutes of playtime, 25 minutes.
20 minutes playtime.
And you're talking 0.03 of a thousandth of an inch of the size of the piston. They're small.
Yeah.
In scale, what that means?
3 millimeter piston.
But they're also air cooled. And so if you blocked off the portion that allows it to be cooled down by the air,
You'll blow them up.
Yeah. In scale, if you looked at one of them diesel fuel haulers, the 18-wheelers, it'd burn up that whole trailer worth of fuel in about 4 hours.
Well, then it's back to the weed eater motor.
All right.
But I tell you what, them little jets move, too.
I just want to get us motivated on a project such as turning a weed eater motor into a motor generator to prove the concept of what it is we're talking about. Because I know it'll run on water. There's no doubt in my mind. If it's true in the laws of physics that steam expands 1,600 times its volume, or water would expand 1,600 times its volume, that's enough pressure there to push down a piston. Now I've worked around boiler systems at 650 PSI to 1,250 PSI boiler systems, enough to turn a big giant propeller on the back of a destroyer and push that thing across the doggone ocean. The torque is there.
In the interest of you and Dr. Raven's head, I have just rebuilt the carburetor for a weed eater, and that's going to go to that. I'm going to put a skateboard wheel on the shaft and put it to that ceiling fan alternator that you've got. So basically, that's coming into fruition. You're going to see what we can get out of that.
Cool.
After that, I'm probably going to idle it down and go to a mini axial flux that I've been planning on building for ages. And you're actually going to see some YouTube video for that stuff.
Looking forward to it, man.
I'm looking forward to that as well.
Yeah, me too. Because basically, once I incorporate that, it's going on the back of my three-wheeled recumbent, which is another project that I've been waiting for ages. And three-wheeled reverse trike recumbent bicycle. And I'm pretty sure with just the weed eater motor making the electricity for an electric motor for the back, I'm probably going to see 45 mile an hour on that sucker.
Well, I got a weed eater motor right here in my hand right now that has a carburetor on the side of it. And if I could build a electric motor that could actually overcome the compression on this thing, that could spin this thing up enough to cause that thing to get hot enough inside there that I could use the vacuum of the carburetor itself to start sucking in a fine mist of water. If you've seen in that video, go back and look at it, and you'll see that this little motor that I got in my hand, it started to buck. The moment that it got hot enough and that water was coming in there, it started to buck. So it was pushing down the piston. And I honestly believe that if you could get this thing up to its full operating temperature or even higher, then you can get this thing to run directly off of vaporized water.
Well, here's a here's an idea. If you put a flywheel on that weed eater and you put a pressure relief valve on the piston, kind of like they had on the old Detroit and Cats diesels, they'd spin the motor up and with that pressure relief off and then drop it in to get it started at real cold temperatures. Put a flywheel on that weeder deal and direct drive any little small starter motor, even for something like a zero turn or a small Datsun or something. You can get it up to whatever RPM you want and then drop the pressure relief valve back in. And you'll have it up to an RPM. Might be able to get it to buck continuously.
Well, the key to using the doggone starter style motor is going to be able to have somebody customize one with air vents inside the electric motor portion. Otherwise, that doggone thing will get too hot trying to get it up to operating temperature. So if you can suck air into there to keep that generator or the motor cool. If you understand what I'm trying to say, starters get hot. They get real hot whenever you're trying to turn them over because they got a lot of force that they're trying to turn around.
Gordon, Mr. Biggerstaff, a regular car alternator, not an alternator, but a starter motor, should be able to crank continuously for a half hour.
Well, there you go. And it shouldn't take a half hour to get it up to operating temperature. But if you got the doggone thing up to operating temperature and was able to do what I'm saying, when the RPMs on the motor overcame that doggone the generator portion or the motor portion of it, it would turn itself into a generator, just like a starter generator does on a tractor.
I have gone for a half hour just on nothing but the starter to get it to a gas station. In granny gear.
Well, I have used it on a standard transmission. I have used the starter to get myself over the hill and out of the street.
Yep. Old 62 Chevy pickup with a straight inline six is what I did the feet on. And it did not take a half hour. It took like 15 minutes.
Is it that powerful?
Yeah.
Yes. It does do damage to the starter.
Yeah, it'll destroy your starter, but it'll get you out of the road.
Yeah.
Which is a whole lot better than somebody slapping you in the rear end with a diesel truck.
But essentially what I'm saying is I want to see a project done. I could use some help if somebody knows somebody that can actually build a motor that would fit on a standard shaft of a weed eater. If you look at the weed eater motor, there's a flywheel up underneath there, aluminum flywheel that goes past the magnetron, and the shaft looks, I don't know, maybe about 3/8 somewhere around about, but you'd have to be able to build some sort of either coupling device for it or an existing electric motor, or be able to build a rotor onto this shaft.
And yeah, you could take some of that rubber hose that they use for the heating and cooling your vehicle. You could find sizes that fit over each other and make that really thick. Use epoxy and clamps, maybe screws to go through. That'd take a lot of torque and still be flexible. And take away the shock of vibration.
Well, the key to this is the most precision possible. If you can actually build the motor onto the shaft, it's a permanent magnet motor, and you can actually build it onto the shaft so that you ain't got any extra wobbles that you don't need. And all you do is hook it to either a 12 or a 24 volt system that starts to spin this motor up and using it as an air compressor. When the head gets hot enough, then you start injecting the water in. And after a while, when the temperature really gets hot inside that piston from all the action going on inside there, then the magnetron that the flywheel is actually going past is pulsing out a deal across the spark plug. And so if there is any stray hydrogen or oxygen inside that cylinder, it'll ignite that hydrogen and oxygen pressing that piston down. You see what I'm saying? But to build the motor, the electric motor, onto the shaft would be the best possible scenario. So just be able to build built something that you could actually mount to the in any existing motor and have that thing be what actually turns the motor over. Even if you could put a gearbox in there to cause it to spin up faster. See what I mean?
Yep.
And then in the opposite direction, those gear ratios will be, I don't know if you've ever seen those little motors, synchronous motors that are in the bottom of microwaves that they have gears in them that makes it move real slow. Alright, so that little plate inside your microwave, it moves real slow. But if you spin them things backwards, you can hear that it goes the opposite direction, raises the RPMs up, and gives you high voltage out of the other side. You see what I mean?
Yes.
So, I'd like to see this project go, man. And if anybody can help me figure it out, you know, put an electric motor on there that's strong enough to get past the compression on that weed eater motor. As far as the weed eater, the motors are air-cooled, but they also use an oil mixture in there. But there's no reason why we couldn't mix some sort of lubricant with the water that we're injecting inside there to basically vaporize it as well along with the water and send a kind of a micro water oil mixture inside the cylinder so the cylinder don't get messed up.
You might have to, for lubrication, you might put a few drops of dishwashing liquid in there and give it some viscosity.
Well, anything to keep that, anything to keep the friction down on the rings of the deal so it don't eat into the cylinder walls. And I'm not even so sure that the water itself might not be enough lubrication to keep it cool.
That's why I was saying a few drops of dishwashing liquid will prolong the life of it anyway and allow it to slip easy.
What about this is if water turns to steam by using BTUs of energy.
Yeah.
All right. 1 pound of water requires 840.
You just cut out. I didn't hear nothing but somebody wadding up some paper.
Yeah, it cut you out there. Say again.
1 pound of water requires 840 some odd BTUs at boiling point to turn it to steam at the same temperature. So, actually, that's where you would get your cooling from. It would keep your engine very, very cool. It would still get hot enough to blister you if you grabbed hold of it, but it would take a lot of the excess heat off. Use it as in the production of the steam itself.
Yeah, but the key is the inside of that cylinder is what we care about. It's going to get hot inside that cylinder.
Yes.
And that's what we want. As soon as we vaporize the water into the cylinder, and it hits that hot cylinder, it's going to expand.
Right.
Pushing down that piston. Well, I honestly believe that if this is done right, that once it gets to a certain point, once you're past, it's already at the steam point, once the heat and the pressure gets high enough, that you'll literally start separating the water, the hydrogen and oxygen in the water, and be able to ignite it just like fuel.
Once you get to 212 degrees, which is your boiling point, wind up any excess energy or any added energy added to that is basically how much steam you're going to get.
Okay, now
it still stays pretty close within about 0.2 to 0.3 of a degree.
Water does not boil at 212 degrees, buddy.
212 degrees, right?
No. Incomplete is wrong. Water boils 212 degrees at sea level, which is 100 millibars.
Right.
Up on a mountain where you only have, 1,000 millibars, I'm sorry. But you go up on a mountain somewhere where you only got 60 or 70 millibars of pressure, the water boils at a much colder temperature. That's why in my deal about the cold steam turbine, under a vacuum, I can water boil at 55 degrees.
Right.
So, if you're gonna pressurize the water, then you're gonna raise the temperature required to boil it. But in pressurizing it, you're condensing the heat. Now, all you gotta do is put just a little bit more heat to it, just a tiny bit. And when it comes down, starts releasing that pressure, then that water is going to turn to steam.
How hot do you think it is actually inside the piston of an air compressor head?
Hot enough to boil water? Under minus pressure, yes. Not enough.
So I'm saying, I bet you could actually turn an air compressor into a doggone engine.
Good.
Yeah, I've seen the airlines get hot on a pneumatic drill, and the drill actually got cold enough where you could barely handle it anymore. You had to keep a glove on when you're using it in a factory all day, drilling out rivets.
Have you guys ever heard of dieseling, as far as a diesel engine starting to run backwards, or when you shut it off, it won't stop, it keeps running?
Yes, I have.
That's called deselling on a car. Yeah. Gasoline engine. If it's not tuned right, yeah, you wind up trying to turn your car off after you've barely been able to keep it running. You turn it off, and the thing just keeps on wanting to go for 10-15 minutes.
Isn't that obnoxious?
Yeah, that's due to the excess heat igniting your fuel every time it compresses.
Well, that's what I'm basing a lot of these ideas off of, is that, you know, you get that cylinder hot, and even without the power on, you're not using electricity anymore to fire the doggone deal. It's the heat of the inside of that cylinder that is igniting the fuel.
With the time that it's compressed, yes.
Yep.
Thing is, though, if you're going to use water, the water is going to drag that heat away. You're going to have some source of heat.
Yeah, but see, you're missing the point that we're not putting that much in there. All we're using is a really tiny, tiny bit. And so there's not enough in there to take that heat away fast enough.
You want to bet?
Yeah, I'd be willing to bet on it.
Push it at 800 and something BTUs to turn that amount of water into steam. As that, the more it steams, the more it regulates it right back down to the temperature.
Well, I'm telling you that, yeah, I've touched the top of an air compressor. I know how hot they get. Yeah, they'll tear you up. So if that outside's that hot, then that inside's got to be screaming hot. And I know that air compressors will build up water moisture up inside that doggone tank. Some of that water moisture's got to be making it back to that compressor head.
Until that water hits it. And it, when it turns to steam, it brings it right down to 212. It won't let it go any higher.
Well, we'll just have to try it and see what happens.
Yes. Your main is back.
But I honestly believe, once you got that thing up hot enough inside that cylinder, you inject the mist of water in there, that thing will run. I couldn't get my electric drill to have enough torque to overcome the doggone compression enough to spin that thing fast enough. Now, if I had an hour or two to sit there and let it build up gradually, it would eventually make it there. But what we need is a high-speed motor with a lot of torque that will spin that thing up really fast like an air compressor head, and then bring the water in a really super fine mist. So it either will work or it won't. I'm on the wheel side.
It's still going to continuously make steam, yes.
That's right. I know there's a lot of physics that you can't get around. I know there's a lot of losses. I ain't worried about all the losses, because if what I believe is possible is possible, then you can get that thing spun up with electricity, get it hot enough to run it as a steam engine, and then after that thing's running as a steam engine and continues to get even hotter, and the more compression and the hotter those cylinders get, at some point that water's going to break down past the point of steam. And if there is even remotely a trace of hydrogen inside there, and you hit a spark inside that cylinder, it's going to ignite that hydrogen.
Hey guys, the video is slowing the call down and causing warnings to flash up on my screen here. Thank you.
Hey, by the way, such as this.
Yeah.
If you tap water in a cylinder and you placed another piston on top of it, if you hit it with a sledgehammer as hard as you can, when the piston jumped back, it would need a solid block of ice in there. Now, if you take another piston that heated up cherry red, the same size as that hole, that cylinder, and you placed it in there, and I mean, instantly could place it in there and slap it with the sledgehammer, the ice would break through pure hydrogen and oxygen.
Well, that's cool.
Sweet.
So, there are possibilities, man. That's what we talk about here on ShazizRadio.com. Possibilities, ideas. Try it before you deny it. That's what I'm saying.
I wonder how high you'd have to lift, how much weight to get it to come down and hit a doggone block of ice and turn it into hydrogen and oxygen. Would it ignite like a diesel and explode the weight back up?
Well, if you actually look inside a doggone piston and actually think about what is going on inside an internal combustion engine, how fast is that piston's actually turning to give you the type of RPMs and horsepower that you got out of a gasoline engine alone? There is a lot of force going on there. There's a lot of things going on there. If you ain't got something just right, if you ain't got the air-fuel mixture just right, the catalytic converter and so on down the line, you know, then you can't keep that doggone engine running properly. But when that thing's perfectly tuned and then it had the doggone the fuel being sent in and just the amount of fuel needed to create the combustion and the pressure inside there, you just made it more efficient. And so with that said, if the mainstream automotive industry out there can't figure out what it is that we've been talking about all this time, you know they know it. You know the fuel industry knows it. So, you know, it ain't being done for purpose. You can't sell fuel if everybody can run around for a month on a gallon of gas. So, what in tarnation? Is this a commercial?
Alright, yes.
Anyway, those pistons are going up and down so doggone fast, and that camshaft's turning, and it's spinning the flywheel, which is turning the transmission on down to the axles that are turning the wheel or the differential. That's a lot of stuff going on there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all coming out of some exploding or pressurized fuel inside the cylinder, whether you're using diesel and just burning it, where it's using pressure, compression to push the piston, or you're actually igniting the fuel like in a gasoline engine, which is pushing it down, or in hydrogen case, you get an implosion, and that implosion would create a rebound effect on the top of that head, which would slam that piston back down the other direction.
It'd be nice if the implosion would use somewhat like make the piston more like a dual action piston.
Well, yeah, put two pistons on there, have them going in opposite directions.
One for the pre-ignition, which would be an implosion, and use the vacuum, and then when it gets up to the top, then I guess part of the way up, you'd use some of that vacuum to bring more in and then explode it again.
Yep, the vacuum of the piston going down on the bottom side would suck the one on the top down, the force of the pressure pushing the other direction. You'd still have the same amount of compression going on inside there, probably might even double the compression inside there. But
that's something you guys. I'm just having to fudge you totally. I was thinking two pistons in the same cylinder.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Pushing both in the opposite direction.
I have to spin myself. I have to correct myself here. That's why you need to change the timing, because on its way up is where you need to ignite it so it would get the implosion and use the vacuum to bring the cylinder up the rest of the way. Then it would explode and go down. So you have to advance the timing. I think it was anywhere from 7 to 15 degrees. when you use an HHO.
Well, you'd have this doggone thing pressing out both sides, man. Like a take a short block on top of a short block upside down, and you got two pistons inside there, and the ignite that fuel in between those two pistons. You got that force. It's going to go wherever it can, and since it's all contained in a chamber, can't go nowhere. It's obviously got to go out. So by modifying a couple blocks to where you got your exhaust on the side of the block as opposed to the top where the heads are normally at, that when that piston get to a certain point, it would let that air pressure out for your exhaust out the other side. You see what I mean?
You told me to remind you to get off on the incandescent light bulb heat for cooking and other things.
Yeah. The kids used to have an easy bake oven that they'd make cakes in, man.
Yep.
And so if you actually think about how much energy is wasted off of just a doggone light bulb itself, there's space heaters out there that use halogen bulbs. They're long sticks. They're halogen bulbs. And those things get so hot you wouldn't want to put your finger anywhere near them. You know?
I have just less than a full 4x8 sheet, which has been cracked in half, which is going to affect the size. I now have all the materials for making a giant easy bake oven, such as I used to use on the job site as a hot box. So my size needs to be calculated for the material that I have that is actually whole material. And I have two 50-watt 12-volt incandescent light bulbs on the with ceramic fixtures. And I'm going to be lining the inside of this box of a maximum size that I can get out of what I have. I have 2-inch foam. And I'll be lining that and hooking it up to a 65-watt solar panel so it doesn't always have to be directly in the high noon and directly pointed at the sun to start cooking some stews in. So that's going to be what I call a solar oven without all the reflective mirrors. I need a little bit more out. I might add an extra mirror and bring some extra sunlight down to it till I get up to wattage. 50 watts always seem to cook between 9 o'clock to 12 o'clock. It would cook anything and everything great, including pre-seasoned thick steaks and everybody else's food that used to be on the job site. We used to put it in there. We had a 75-watt bulb and a 50-watt bulb. And that started warping the lid and everything. You could smell the food and everybody couldn't wait for lunch. So basically we unscrewed the 50-watt bulb first. The 75-watt bulb was still too much, so we unscrewed the 75 and used only 50 watts. So 50 watts seems to be what we need. I've got two of them and extra solar panels if I need it. So there'll be a video coming up on that as well.
Well, you know what? Jermaine just hit one on there, boy. I tell you what. Now, see, I know I ain't as stupid as I look now. He put one on there, Simpson's balanced two-stroke engine. He's got a doggone GIF animation of just exactly what we were talking about.
Awesome. Gotta take a look at that bad boy.
Click on that link, man. So, somebody take over the show for a second.
Alrighty.
I'll be back.
Well, back off the incandescent heating. If you we were talking about a trailer, and the point that I didn't bring in, trailers usually have only like 3/4 inch insulation in the walls because they're not built 4x. Like you got a 2x4. Most houses have your 3.5 inches. Which is actually the width of a 2x4 after finishing. You usually have that much insulation in the side. Now your trailers are usually using 2x4s for the framework, not 2x4s but 2x2s, leaving only your 3/4 inches for insulation on there. If they're insulated more or insulated more like a thermos, yeah, even a 50 watt bulb would actually heat the trailer. And the efficiency of your insulation is basically what you're fighting. And then it really wouldn't matter with your thermos or your thermal vacuum in between. No heat can get out, or very, very little. The a 50 watt bulb probably would be enough to actually heat your trailer down to a certain temperature at night. Be your most efficient. So, but all I have here for the hot box or the easy bake, giant easy bake solar oven is 2-inch foam, and I think that's better than the what we had before. We only had an inch and a half, and I had to take liquid nail and long screws to go through it to put it together. And that held up darn near about 6 months on the job site. But this is going to be sitting out here, and I'm going to be cooking a bunch of stuff. I'm not too sure, but probably stews where it works more like a crock pot. And hopefully this white foam, which is different than the foam I had before, I'm hoping this white foam won't start melting under the heat. If not, I'll just have to readjust. Any thoughts there, Boomer?
Yeah.
Is there any place I can get that foam board that you see down at Lowe's for $20-something for a 4x8 sheet? Is there a cheaper place I can get that stuff? Because I knew that held up well.
Yeah. That foam board you're talking about?
Yeah.
Can't think of the name right off the hand, but they're about half a mile from my house, and $20 for a 4x8 sheet, a 1-inch thick, it's all comparable. In other words, you get a sheet that's a 1/2 inch thick, it's going to cost you $10. 1/4 inch is going to cost you $5. 2 inches is going to cost you $40. And that's the going price.
I can't find that 2-inch anywhere.
Oh.
They don't carry it at Lowe's or Home Depot. I'd like to have a sheet.
2-inch, that's real simple. I mean, what is the name of that?
Look, $40, that's a great one there, and I already know the measurements on that. I'll use everything except for 2 1-foot squares. Put it all together, and that'll be a great size to work with, because I've used
so this place I'm telling you about, you could order 4 inches thick if you wanted.
That'd be $80, huh?
Uh-huh.
Well, either way,
I have to wait for you to do
it. Either way, all these different ideas that we're talking about, I'm sitting here looking at this GIF animation that Jermaine posted in the chat room. Everybody need to take a look at that link. I'm seeing so much potential with this thing. As far as that would almost be so simple to turn into a steam engine, it's just crazy.
But you can see the torque it has, huh?
Yeah. Jermaine?
That's better.
Try that again, Jermaine. You just kind of cut out real bad.
Use 4 pistons in a cross pattern.
See, I like the way your brain thinks, man. I think you're going to go a long ways in life if you keep thinking the way you've been thinking, Jermaine. I'm impressed.
He's a prodigy already, I'd say. That preparation skill just blows me away.
So, if we can get a few things together and actually run some of these ideas into an actual working prototype, I think we can prove a lot of what we're talking about. I know that if you took an internal combustion engine and used it to its maximum potential, I mean, look what's going on right now. You got heat in your car when you want it. You got AC in your car when you want it. That is providing everything's working properly. And there's still a whole lot of wasted energy left over to spare. You got the car is going down the road. It has to be aerodynamic to help it be more efficient. So they make them kind of round it off and, louvers and stuff to try to send that air around it. When in reality, you could actually capture some of that wind energy on the way by. You could capture the solar energy on the way. You could capture the friction of the tires, the friction of the brakes, the actual motion of the wheels as they're turning around down the road, and so on and so forth. You know, what's the point of putting an alternator on the engine, bogging the engine down, when you could put the alternator on the wheel. You see what I mean?
But you're only getting 5% of your combustion to your rear wheel already. I like the solar panel thing. That comes free from the sun.
Yeah, but see, when you get that kind of...
That gives me one-third more horsepower and one-third more gas mileage, giving me two-thirds the bang for the buck.
Yeah, I agree, but what is the weight of an average vehicle?
3,200 pounds.
All right, so you got 3,200 pounds moving at, let's say, 55 miles an hour, and you need a little bit of power boost to your battery. When you dump the switch on the alternator that's actually built into the wheel, that's not even going to remotely slow you down.
750 motorcycles right at about 1,200 pounds to 900 pounds. The small Datsun anywhere right around 1,500 to 1,700. Larger cars, such as a Caprice Classic, get closer to around 3,000.
See, if you used every bit of the laws of physics to your advantage, that alternator doesn't stay on all the time as long as the battery stays in charge, unless you got a major drain on your battery, such as you're running your air conditioner, your radio, and everything else all down the road, your lights and all that, then the alternator never really has to kick on. You know, just when the voltage regulator realizes the battery voltage is getting low, then it'll kick on the alternator and you can hear it bog down. Well, if intermittently you're driving down the road and you just get this little, it kicks on every so often and charges that battery up just with the spinning of those wheels alone, you wouldn't even need an alternator on the motor.
That's my solar panel on mine.
Well, that too.
My engine runs like crap, but I still get decent mileage in the daytime. Nighttime, it would definitely show.
So, why couldn't you hook an alternator up to the drive shaft of the car?
Because it's still energy in and energy out. You're taking away from that 5% that's less, that's left over.
Man, I think you worry about numbers too much.
Now, if I put an axial flux with a prop on the front of my vehicle and went down the road, it would take a lot. It would be a lot more efficient, and I'd probably get better gas mileage.
Well,
but I think that with a 4.5 tip speed ratio, meaning at 10 mile an hour, I'd be getting the tips blowing at 45 mile per hour. If I get up to 80 miles per hour, I'm putting a lot of RPMs on, and there's thousands of miles per hour on the tip of that blade. I think they'd call that quite dangerous and get me reckless driving.
You're building them actual flux out of brake rotors anyway. What happens if you have one specifically milled to basically have the magnets inside the rotor itself? And you got an extra rotor on there doing pretty much the same doggone thing.
I'd have to have a variable pitch, pitch on the blades to keep it at a decent.
No, I ain't talking about no blades. I'm talking about using the wheel of your car or the axle itself to actually generate that power.
Yes, probably could. With a torque converter that is variable.
And from what I've seen from some of your videos, that if you dead short that thing, you got a good set of brakes now.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. Definitely put off a lot of amps to slow that sucker down too.
So your generator would actually be a portion of your braking system as well. If you wanted to brake, you just hit it dead short.
If I had a hubcap in the shape of a cone, I could adjust the speed really by just running a wheel that would run down. When the RPMs of the wheels got higher, I could adjust it and move it out farther and let run off the friction towards the peak of the cone.
I can make it both. I know how to make it.
And if you let the, when the field collapses, once you release that brake, you get a sudden surge out of that of those coils.
Yeah, I can make the top of the car look like a doggone Tesla coil.
Yeah.
we'll just shoot a bolt over the car sitting there playing road games.
I'd buy that one.
That would definitely knock out his car computer.
Well, guys, we're down to it, man. Time flies when you're having fun.
Yeah. And the ideas flow at the end of the show where we stumble over each other as well.
Yeah.
Sad time of the show.
And so with that said, you've been listening to the Mad Science Show. I hope that you take some of these ideas and run with them, because the key to this whole deal is an idea is just an idea unless you do something with it. You know?
Yeah, if I get over unity, I'm definitely going to run with it.
I'm wanting to see what we can do with existing motors. If it was up to me, we would perfectly machine one and engineer it properly to begin with. You wouldn't have all these losses, and every bit of wasted energy would be accounted for, and you'd use it all. But right now, for the average Joe, being able to modify already existing equipment into something that could be a alternative energy source for emergency purposes or to supplement your electric bill, that's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm interested in at this point. Now, if we had, if we had the machine shop and the access to the tools, and we had these brains in the right machine shop, the right lab, at the same time troubleshooting everything, I believe less than 30 days it'd be a done deal, period.
Oh, did you know that a Harley-Davidson alternator is actually a permanent magnet? It functions as a starter, and it also functions as an alternator, but it's built just like the ceiling fan motor.
I do now.
And it's a permanent magnet. It is much more efficient. Rather than being 5%, it is 45%. It's much better.
All right, well, we got to go, guys.
Eat a motor and see what we can come up with.
Thanks, Jermaine and Justin and... I forgot everybody's on here. Raymond and Buddy.
Jermaine Fishwick, Justin Aldridge.
Keep telling you, sis, you don't love me anymore.
Sure I do.
Just said your name.
You forget my name? You forget
me. I just said it. It took me a second to get my brain. You know, I'm sitting here while I'm still looking at this diagram that Jermaine put up there.
I've been staring at it the whole time. I keep
it goes around and around and around.
Yeah, well, I'm impressed by it.
My gosh, boomer hits. Boomtown
level. Because the amount of torque. When there's an explosion inside that doggone deal, when the fuel ignites inside there and those things are forced out in both directions, it's pushing torque in both directions. It's amazing. And it's exactly what we were talking about. So, you know, if you can think it, chances are it's already been thought. But you need to put these pieces of the puzzle in the right configuration. And you got an internal combustion engine that's not only super efficient, that, as far as I'm concerned, if you can't find free energy, you simply ain't looking hard enough for it, period. We're surrounded by it. Any last words, guys? We got to go.
Yeah, if you're ever in a video chat with Jermaine, and he's trying to take a drink, don't make him smile or laugh. It gets me.
Shut up.
I had a nice young blonde over the one day. She made him blush.
Alright, cool.
You made a mess then.
Alright, well, everybody, you've been listening to Mad Science. That's what we do here. So stay tuned for the Knights of the Round Table tomorrow. And if you're available, guys, and want to join in on the Knights and try to solve world issues or whatever, you know, that's what we do. Peace and love. Woo. Take care.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap!
Ah! Ah! Ah!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.